skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 71 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And this is going to be a disaster of an episode because Mark's hungover and Gemma's got the flu.
Starts moving to go on, you know.
So we apologise now officially for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
I think we'll be all right.
We'll be fine. We'll get through it. We'll soldier on. Gemma, also, since we last saw you, I believe that you celebrated your birthday. What was it, 40?
I don't, because that's like 6 years' time. Oh. I'm 34. Ooh. 30 bloody four.
On that note, you probably thought that we forgot your birthday. We haven't. So, from skip to the end... Here is a very nicely wrapped present for you.
I think, is it my P45?
Nope, but it's something that we think you're going to really like. It's very rare.
I love it! That's amazing!
Tell the people what it is.
I have got a official Simpsons Poochie collectible card, and it says, my traits are oddball, idiot, cartoon, and animal, and you couldn't have been right. Thank you very much, boys.
No problem.
That's amazing. It's so cool.
Official, and it's, I like the thing, we'll put this on Instagram for everyone to see, but it's also got like a nice little holder for it so it doesn't get damaged or anything. Yeah. I can tell you now that wasn't expensive at all.
On our website and stuff, when we've got pictures of Gemma, can we replace that with that picture of Poochie now?
Well, just body and then the head of the dog.
Yeah. Amazing.
Let's do it.
Speaking of the website, please go and check it out. It's skiptotheend.co.uk. All of our new listeners, please follow us on Twitter at STTEpodcast and on facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. Before we get into the meat of the show, a couple of other things I wanted to cover that are quite wrestling-based. Now, long-term listeners will remember that when Mark and I went to New York last summer, we managed to somehow get on camera for the WWE show Total Divas.
Amazing.
We had to sign waivers and everything so that they could use our likeness, etc., etc. And ever since then, since last August, we've been eagerly awaiting our big screen debut, haven't we, Mark?
And it was the season finale for season 6. So it's not just a normal episode. This is the one that everyone's got. It's an extended one that everybody tunes in for.
Mm-hmm. And we weren't on it.
We got cut.
The bastards.
Right.
They cut us.
I riot. I riot now.
Our scene's completely gone.
I'm thinking of writing a strongly worded letter to Vince McMahon.
My only thing is that I'm kind of grasping on is the brand new season when it comes out later on in the year is the Mark and Ben special.
Could be.
To launch it off again to get the listeners back on board.
I hope so. I mean, they kind of need the strength in numbers.
This is it, you see. Yeah, because we've got the reputation now. They want us to put them over. That's how it works. So it must be that.
I am furious.
I'm furious.
I'm not happy because I wanted just to get a screen grab. 1 second would have been enough just to go out there and go, you know, listen to the new Skip to the End featuring Mark and Ben as seen on Total Divas. It just sounds great, doesn't it? It's going to get you a whole new fan base.
It's a tagline.
I am absolutely gutted. But we can't be too angry at WWE because they also did us a big favour, didn't they, Mark, the other day?
Yes, they did. They sent us to pretty much ringside tickets for the house show in Birmingham, which was bloody good fun. And we got to see some good names like Kevin Owens, Nakamura.
Eric Rowan.
Eric Big Red Rowan. AJ Styles.
Oh, to see AJ in person was unreal.
And we were right by the ramps. We got to see all the entrances better than anything. So, yeah, we still love you, WWE, but we have got a little side note saying you need to make up for the Total Divas stuff.
Thinking about it, do you reckon that's why they positioned us by the ramp so they could get more footage of us for the special that's going to be all about us in season 7?
Oh, my.
It's all starting to make sense.
Yeah.
Everything's forgiven.
Everything's forgiven.
So the heel turns onto face now.
Big time. Yeah. This is the Big Show show.
Coming up on this episode, we've got plenty of stuff to go through. Gemma, what is our main review this time round?
We're going to be reviewing Alien Covenant, the new Alien film by Ridley Scott.
See how I went to Gemma with that, Mark, so she got the name
right. Thank you, I appreciate it.
Alien Incontinent.
No. And Mark, what is our rewatch?
Oh, it's a big one. It's Blue Velvet.
David Lynch.
I'm very excited to hear what you're going to say about that, Ben, because it's your first time.
It is. I've never seen it, yeah.
Ooh.
Gemma, what's our topic of conversation?
We're going to be talking about our top three addiction movies.
I'm curious to see how we've all approached this. I've had a very specific method to this, and I want to see if you guys have done something similar.
Excellent.
Mark, who are we mass debating over this time round?
Denzel Washington. And it's been our most popular masturbate since we've launched it.
Fantastic.
So it's building and building, which is great to see.
We'll also be playing the second round of Whose Tagline Is It Anyway, taking listener questions and all the other fun things that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. Let's get started.
Our top three topic this time around is our top three addiction movies. A very interesting, quite controversial one, actually. We've not really done a controversial subject in a very long while. I think I enjoyed our rant so much on the last episode. I thought, yeah, let's mix it up. Let's do something like this instead. It's going to be an interesting one, because I think we're probably going to talk about films we've not yet covered on the podcast. So how did you guys find the topic, first and foremost?
Yeah, it was a difficult one, really, because first of all, I had to decide what I considered to be an addiction film. We'll come to it in a bit, but there are films that I think you could consider as drug films, for example, but aren't necessarily about addiction. They're just about drug use. It's not entirely the same thing. So it's about first discovering what counts and then finding your way around it. So I've gone for a specific methodology here. Instead of just picking my top three addiction films, I've come with my top one drug addiction film, my top one booze addiction film, and my top one gambling addiction film.
Ooh.
I've done something similar. I wanted to show the different areas of addiction.
I found this topic very addictive in the way that there's too much choice.
Yeah.
I think we could pick 10 drug films if we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I've joined you both. I've got a mix of the whole thing, so it's good. Don't worry. I've not let the side down on this one.
That's
I
good
promise.
So I want to throw this over to Ben first. I want to hear your first choice.
I'm going to start with drugs. And I've gone with Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, me too.
You got it as well.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow, what an absolute headfuck this film is. Written and directed by Darren Aronofsky. And it focuses on the various drug addictions of a man, his best friend, his girlfriend, and his mum. And it's very weird because the main three, the man, his girlfriend, and his best friend, are played by Jared Leto, Jennifer Connelly, and Marlon Wayans. And their story is a relatively typical story of heroin addiction and the spiral that they go down. The interesting character, or the quirk that this film has that's original over any other drugs film, is that Leto's mother, played by Ellen Burstyn, she then has her own drug addiction. She gets addicted to these kind of weight loss amphetamines that then send her into this manic spiral. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing watching her form of drug addiction alongside their form of more regular heroin addiction. It's a very, very odd, very powerful movie. And it starts weirdly. When I first started watching it, it kind of felt almost like a comedy. The first maybe half an hour or so is quite slapstick and quite funny, but by God, it doesn't end that way. It gets so, so dark by the back end of the film.
Mm-hmm. Don't watch this if you're planning on like getting married that day, you're about to buy a puppy, you know, like the happiest things of life, just this is going to bring you down massively. But it's so clever the way how the whole film is made. I could liken it to like a music video in the 90s, like an MTV typical music video. The way how it all intercuts with various different scenes, the noises that amplifies music in a way. One of the prime examples of this is towards the end of the film where we see each of the four characters really getting at their lowest ebb. Sarah, Jared Leto's mother, when she's going through electric shock treatment.
Yeah.
And the way how what you see on the screen and what you hear kind of joins together very effectively, it's just haunting. The whole film is haunting. And I think this is one of the masterpieces of certainly the millennium of films.
It is, and you've picked up there on the quick cutting. So generally, an average film will have something like 600 to 700 cuts, and this one has over 2,000, which is that real fast MTV style.
Jesus.
And they start off relatively normal, the cuts, but as the film goes further on, the cuts get quicker and shorter, and it really builds up to this crescendo when you're cross-cutting between the fates of the four lead characters. And it's hypnotic, this film. And all the credit in the world has to go to Ellen Burstyn. Oh. She was nominated for an Oscar for this film, quite rightly, because she's the best thing about it by a mile. She's unbelievable. This spiral into addiction. And about 45 minutes into the film, she gives this monologue about the reason why she's taking these diet pills is because she wants to lose weight to get onto a game show. And that's the only thing she has in her life. Her husband's dead. Her son no longer lives with her. All she has to live for is the idea of getting on TV. Mm-hmm. And this, it's probably about a 2 or 3 minute monologue. And this is just a close up of her face Unbelievable stuff.
It breaks my heart. To think that a red dress is the epitome of her happiness. She associates that with her son's graduation, when she was still with her husband who is alive. And this red dress is her only reason of living. It just tears you apart.
I've seen this film once, and it was probably about 8-10 years ago, and I will not go back and watch it because it actually messed me up a bit. It was one of those ones that was so bleak and so haunting and horrible.
Yeah.
It's not that urge of, oh, fancy getting home tonight, getting a pizza, having some beers, and do you know what, I'll watch Requiem for a Dream. And when I hear you guys talk about it, I need to refresh myself because it's been so long. But every time I go to watch it again, I think, I don't think I want to do that again. It's like Kids last time we did the rewatch. It's such a good film, and it was really, really effective and left a big impact with me. But why would I want to go and put myself through those 2 hours again? It's tough viewing. I remember in that film, Jared Leto is bloody damn good. And we do rip him to pieces sometimes. But he was outstanding in that film. And like you said, his mother, the two addictions, it just hit me too hard. I was watching it like literally wanting to weep. And I was like, it's tough viewing.
Yeah, the way how the film ends when you see all of them lying in a fetal position, almost like it's putting them back into the point of birth.
It's heavy.
Oh, full circle.
It is very heavy.
I'm not even going to make a joke for this one. I'm just going to leave it with, it's heavy. And if you are listening and you go and check it out, just prepare yourself because it's very testing.
Yeah, and don't buy a kitten that day.
Or get married.
Or get married. Go for it, Mark. Your choice.
I'm sticking with drugs, and I'm going to have to go for the big, obvious choice of Trainspotting.
Yes.
I have to.
It's. I couldn't leave it off. I was trying not to because I thought it's a bit too obvious, but I absolutely love this film. So obviously it's based on the book by Irvin Welsh. I got that name right. I didn't say Irwin or Irene Welsh. And it's directed by Danny Boyle, who, for me, is very hit and miss. I love some of his films, and I hate some of his films. And recently, I've not liked a lot of his stuff, and I still haven't got round to watching Trainspotting 2.
Me neither.
Nope,
and
me
I
neither.
Don't, again, I don't have a massive desire. I think it's been too long.
Yeah.
But this film is a classic, and it tells us about the lives that these guys basically live and being trapped in this bubble of heroin addiction, which is portrayed that some people moaned and said it was glorified in this film, and they didn't like it, and critics said it made it look too good. I did not want to shoot up heroin after watching this film in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I think Renton, played by Ewan McGregor, is one of his finest performances he's ever done. And he's never really matched it since. He's done a lot of sort of shitty performances that never really stay with me.
Obi-Wan, cough, cough.
This film really does make it so kind of such an impact because he's narrating pretty much most of the film. So you're really inside his head while he's going through trying to get cold turkey and come off this horrible addiction. But like all kind of heroin addicts, the tragic tale is you don't really ever come off it. Mm. You don't really, you know, drug use like this, for me, it's all circular, it's not linear. You are going to go back round and you see these people basically coming to terms with themselves, poisoning themselves to death. And they do it in such a horrible, bleak way that we have the death of one of their childs. That whole scene of
the baby on the roof.
Yeah.
I think we might have discussed this previously on some, I don't know how this topic came around, but that scene with the baby crawling off the, it mentally fucks with my head and it stays with me. Again, this is another film I'm not in a massive keen kind of rush to watch again, but everything else about it is quite good. You know, those comedy elements about this film.
Begbie. Mm-hmm.
That's all you need.
Yeah.
That's the kind of lightness you need in this film. The soundtrack is outstanding.
It really
absolutely
is.
Unbelievable. And I do believe that Danny Boyle portrays heroin addiction in the best way possible because you don't want to do it afterwards. You see the pain they go through. You see the loss they have to deal with. And the cast, the soundtrack, the directing, it's spot on.
I think the scene that really hits home for me that I wouldn't want to have anything to do with the horse is the bit where he ODs and he starts to sink into the ground as Perfect Day plays.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want anything to do with this.
I don't even want to listen to Lou Reed anymore.
I thought you were about to say the bit when when Spud rips his bed quilt
oh
and the
God.
Shit goes all over everyone. I thought that was the bit where you didn't want to... that was me watching E.T., but... What a film. What a film. And I should actually follow it up and go and watch the sequel because I've just told you how great I love this film.
It is funny, isn't it? Because I know how much we all like that first one and none of us were particularly interested in seeing the sequel. And I think it is just because it's been too long and we've been bitten so many times by late-in-life sequels of late, like Anchorman 2, Dumb and Dumber 2, Zoolander 2, all these films that were just unnecessary that now I'm just not interested.
Yeah, I'd rather watch Baywatch than Trainspotting 2.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Come on then, it's your topic, Gemma. You need to now, bam.
It is. So I'm going to go the BDSM route, and my second choice is 2002's Secretary.
Oh, with Robert California.
Yeah, it is. So I've looked at this slightly different. I was going to go for an another sex addiction film, but I rewatched this not too long ago, and it actually does portray a different kind of addiction. So we follow a lady called Lee, played superbly by Maggie Gyllenhaal, and she's left a mental asylum. So she goes back home, tries to adjust to normal life because she got in there because of self-harming. She meets James Spader's character, Mr. Grey, by the way, the only Mr. Grey, may I add, where she becomes his secretary to his law firm. All very well. And then she starts discovering that he likes to be quite dominant. So he spots a few mistakes in her letters and spanks her one day. And she kind of likes it. Then she realises that she actually enjoys being at the role of the submissive to his dominant side. And she starts going into this world of S&M and bondage and discipline. And she realises that this is her new life. This breathes life into her. She no longer needs to self-harm. And he actually tells her, do not self-harm. You're going to eat this tonight. You're going to go for a walk. You're going to go for a bath. And she does this with such strictness that this is her life. This is how she wants to continue with her recovery in a way. And it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating.
I haven't seen this film.
Have you?
No. You would love it.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about me that you think suggests I would like this film, Mark?
You like power.
I'm interested, though, that the character's name is Mr. Grey. Is that really true?
It is. It's E. Edward Grey.
See, because I wonder then if E.L. James has ripped that off for her books. Because she ripped everything else off from Twilight, didn't she?
Yeah.
I should supposedly, you know, say allegedly at this point, but I'm not going to because she just did.
It just frustrates me when, obviously, the whole 50 Shades of Grey train came into town and everybody who was female and 60 or 18 or whatever decided this was the way how love should be. Bollocks. This is the ultimate S&M film. It's absolutely superb. It has a real warmth and heart to it, whereas 50 Shades of Grey just left me cold and dead like a dead fish. This is where it's at. It's a weird addiction to have, but ultimately towards the climax of the film, where the ultimate test of power and submission is displayed, and we really see Lee's sort of commitment to this man that she so has fallen in love with hard.
My concern about this whole thing of your choice here is that you're acting so surprised by the fact that they have this much control over this woman. You didn't realise you signed a contract with this podcast.
Oh my God,
and me and Ben say, you bring cider. You turn up on time. It's only little bits and little steps, but it won't be long until we're telling you to turn up in certain clothes, eat certain foods, and dress and look a certain way. So don't get too carried away with it being quite unreal, because it's going to happen to you.
Wow, Stockholm Syndrome at its finest.
And we've got pen to paper to prove you're doing anything we ask.
As well.
Yep.
What
and so has everyone out there seen it.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's why I chose this film.
Good work. It's basically a preview trailer to your life. But Ben, do check it out. It's great.
It is.
Try switch off from any characters they've been in other things since then, because you'll associate it with a certain show.
It is hard not to see him as Robert California, though. You know? It was like, that is one of the reasons why I couldn't enjoy Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Because Robert California was just bossing the Avengers around.
Just slyly looking at the camera every now and again.
Captain America, there is only sex.
So Ben, back to you.
Oh, this time around I'm going to go with gambling. Ooh. So my favourite gambling addiction film is The Cooler.
Never seen it.
I've heard of it.
It's an excellent film written and directed by a chap called Wayne Kramer, and it stars William H. Macy, Alec Baldwin and Maria Bello. It's the story of Bernie, played by Macy, and he is a degenerate gambler who gets into a hell of a lot of debt with a lot of casinos around town. And then the owner of one of the casinos, Alec Baldwin, decides to pay off his debts as long as he comes in and works for him as a cooler. And a cooler is someone who has such bad luck that their bad luck rubs off on other people. So just by being in and around the casino, he causes other people to lose, which means the house wins, Alec Baldwin's happy. He also credits Baldwin's character with getting him over his addiction, because what Baldwin's character did was he broke his knee with a sledgehammer.
Brutal.
Yeah, which was him hitting rock bottom. So ever since then, he's kind of come over his addictions. And now it's about how he falls in love with this woman who works at the casino, played by Maria Bello, who Baldwin's character initially pays to be with him, to keep him working at the casino after his debt's been paid. And it's a fantastic film, but it's mostly about the performances more than anything else. I love William H. Macy. I think he's one of the absolute best character actors in the business. But more specifically, he is the absolute best at playing sad sack losers.
Yes. Fargo, anybody?
This is it. So in Fargo, he played Jerry Lundegaard, sad sack loser. In Magnolia, quiz kid Donnie Smith.
Yes.
Massive sad sack loser. He is the king of it.
God, yes.
Do you reckon he's a method actor? He goes just a solid loser all his life.
But he is so, so good in that mould, and he owns this film. But then, he owns it because he's the lead, but then every scene is stolen from him by Alec Baldwin. This is the best Baldwin's ever been, and that's evidenced by the fact he was nominated for an Oscar for this, and it's his only Oscar nomination, Baldwin. And he plays this casino owner as a really old school style guy, you know, the kind of guy who would have palled around with the Rat Pack. He's a guy who's definitely got mafia connections, and he likes things done the old way, hence him breaking your kneecap if you run off with his money, that sort of thing. And it's an incredibly powerful, big performance by Baldwin, but there's a lot of subtlety as well. There's layers there where you can see he genuinely does care about Bernie, even though he has to be tough on him. It's a wonderful performance. Maria Bello's brilliant in it as well. She always is. Ron Livingston's great in it. It's just a really, really, really good film. It's a bit of a stretch. I mean, you have to believe in the whole concept of a cooler, believe that luck is such a thing for the film to really work. So you have to suspend your disbelief to a point, but it's a really enjoyable film.
I want to watch it.
I'm sold. I'm definitely more up for watching this than Requiem for a Dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just sold on the cast itself there. It sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
I always forget how good William H. Macy is. Isn't he wonderful?
We need to see more and more of him.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Is he up in anything coming out?
I don't know.
No. Mm. If you are listening, let us know.
Yeah, William H. Macy, if you're listening.
Yeah, he's in Shameless, isn't he? The American version of Shameless, which I never really got on board with.
Mm-mm.
Whenever one makes a good British comedy or good series and they take it to America, apart from obviously The Office,
mm-hmm.
I'm never interested. Yeah. I don't want to see the in-betweeners in America or anything.
Yeah. Neither did America. Go on, Mark, your choice.
Mine is now all about the horrible and very bad addiction to alcohol. So it is Leaving Las Vegas. I built that up far too much, but it's true. This film is brilliant, and have you both seen it?
Yes.
Nicolas mm-hmm. Cage actually putting a decent performance in, putting a lot of effort and heart into his role, and not just being paid for any old straight-to-DVD shite. So this was back in 95, so it was a long time ago when he used to give a shit. I think it was before or just slightly after the Coke Up days, you know, when he was really going off on the complete rails. But he plays Ben Sanderson, who's a scriptwriter, and he goes basically to drink himself to death in Vegas. But he meets Sarah, who's this prostitute, who's also going through, well, she's being controlled by a pimp that's very abusive and very, very, very harsh and wrong. And we see this relationship basically on mutual despair. And I think that is pretty hardcore viewing when you're seeing that both of these two people have got this really, really bad life. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to help each other. But we all know, as we've mentioned on this topic already, these addictions don't go away. These addictions don't really heal each other. You can't help each other when you're both rock bottom.
It's like kindred souls meeting and finding common ground.
Exactly. You put it nicely.
Thank
but
you.
This film, man, it's bloody amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
And I think that it's underrated. Not many people talk about it. Nicolas Cage gets noticed for, you know, performances like the Wicker Man remake or stuff like this. But he does actually have a really good screen presence when he actually gives a shit.
Didn't he win the Oscar for this?
He did.
So there you go. Do you know what I mean? That sells itself.
Justice.
Was that the last Oscar he probably won and the only one he ever will win? Because he's
should have won one for Vampire's Kiss, but hey, that's just my opinion.
I think he'll have a career renaissance. I think one of these days, not far from now, some big name, some Tarantino or Scorsese will put him in a picture and bring him back to the top.
Yeah, or Nolan.
Yeah.
Oh. Now, see, if they make Dunkirk 2.
Lost to New York or something.
He's ready for that role. But a good film, and I hope people that listen go and check this out if you haven't seen it, because Nicolas Cage used to give a shit, and it was worth seeing just for to basically wipe the slate clean of all the shit he's done recently.
Yeah.
I'm being a bit mean to him today, aren't I? He's had his moment, though. We've had him as a masturbate, and we've all jizzed over him, so.
We did. So it's justified, so it's fine. My last one. So I'm going to go for booze as well, and I'm going to say it with this line. We want the finest wines available to humanity. We want them here, and we want them now.
With Neil and I.
Brilliant film.
So this one's a little bit different because it doesn't depict addiction over a period of time, like a month, a year, you know, 2 years, 5 years. This depicts it over a space of a few days. With Neil is played gloriously by Richard E. Grant, and his mate Andy, or Marwood, if you will, is played by Paul McGann. And we've got pervy Uncle Monty as with Richard Griffiths.
Bongo-y!
He's just the best. So it depicts basically two actors, two resting, I use that with quote air, resting actors who are in this squalid flat with dirty dishes, dead rats, and a heck of a lot of alcohol and drugs. And they decide to get away to Cumbria, to Uncle Monty's cottage for the weekend. This is absolutely fantastic because it's a comedic take on addiction. So it doesn't show the absolute serious side, but you could argue and say because it's just a window of Withnail's clearly booze-addicted lifestyle, it's only a few days. And so it's just showing him how he lives his life, how he lives his day every day by drinking vodka or wine, beer, lighter fluid, if you will. But I love how Richard E. Grant plays him because in actual real life, Richard E. Grant is allergic to alcohol and he was never drunk before he filmed this film. So his reactions that you see when he obviously drinks himself to a stupor, he had to go and research that. And apparently the first time he did it, he threw up all over this beautiful Persian rug that director Bruce Robinson had on the set.
I never knew that.
Allergic to alcohol. I don't buy it.
No, he's always going to be out. He must have had beers on the set of bloody Spice World, the movie, or whatever it is. He couldn't have done that sober.
No, it sounds like something people say when they have a few too many beers and throw up and go, I must be allergic. Well, either that, you're just a lightweight.
But it's just a really great snapshot of a possible life that we don't see. In the book, I understand it's much bleaker than what the film portrays. I think he commits suicide in the book. Allegedly.
It's a bit different.
I know. But we don't know what the future brings for him. We don't know whether or not he will find himself down an alleyway in 1970s Britain when the counterculture movement has died fully. Because it's almost, this film does depict the death of counterculture. Mm-hmm. And it's them trying to figure out, well, what next? What do we do now? Fantastic film. It's a cult classic. It's funny as hell. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's one of the most quotable films possibly I've ever watched, you know. I mean to have you, even if it must be burglary. Amazing.
Okay, Ben, your last choice, and I want to hear it now.
So I'm going to stick with booze for my final one as well, and I'm going with a film called Everything Must Go.
Never seen it either.
Is this a few years ago, like 2013?
2010, yeah. It's not too long ago. It's a film that stars Will Ferrell, and it's a rare Will Ferrell serious performance. And he stars the film as a character called Nick Halsey, who is an alcoholic, and he lost his job and his wife on the same day because he went away and got drunk at a convention in, I think it was in Denver, and he got blackout drunk and doesn't remember what went on, but apparently some woman put in a complaint against him. He lost his job, it got back to his wife, she kicked him out of the house. She then threw all of his stuff out onto the front lawn, but he wouldn't move, he was just sat there on the lawn with his stuff. His AA sponsor is a guy played by Michael Peña, who is a cop. And this cop says to him, okay, to give you a bit of time to get your shit together, I will grant you a 3-day permit to run a yard sale. So that gives him a reason to stay on his front yard. And it's just about him coming to terms with all these things that have gone on in his life. And then a new neighbour moves in across the road from him, played by Rebecca Hall, who's absolutely wonderful in this, and she's wonderful in everything. And then they form this really lovely bond that's never sexual. It's just two people who really need to connect with one another, because she's moved to this new town, her husband's away on business, he hasn't come with her, so she's really lonely, he's really lonely, he's at his lowest ebb. And they find each other, and they just become friends and get each other through this really, really dark time in both of their lives. And it's a lovely performance from Will Ferrell. He's a man who, you don't expect the word subtlety to be used when to him, but it is a beautifully subtle performance. It's not the big, over-the-top Will Ferrell characters that you're used to. It's a very human performance, and it's beautifully, beautifully done. He also befriends a young lad who lives in the neighbourhood and gets him to help him sell stuff at his yard sale as well. And this lad is a kid called Christopher Wallace, who in real life is the notorious B.I.G.'s son.
That's what I was thinking. Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it's his son.
Immediately, I was thinking, well, Biggie's back from the dead. Amazing.
He's been reincarnated as a small boy.
Yes.
Yeah, and this kid's great, and the chemistry he has with Will Ferrell is brilliant as well. And it's a really bleak film, but it doesn't have a typical Hollywood happy ending, but it is quite uplifting at the end. Everyone kind of finds some kind of catharsis or can see a pathway through the fog they're in. You know, they don't get everything they've ever wanted, but they can see a way forward. And it's a really, really beautiful film. And it's written and directed by a fella called Dan Rush, who's never done anything before or since. Never written or directed anything before this or after it. He's just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Is he dead?
I don't know.
That's a shame, because if it's that good, like you're saying, he got this performance out of Will Ferrell, which we don't expect. Mm-hmm. Where's he gone?
I don't know. Aww. I can't find anything about him on the internet. And Dan Rush, it's not exactly a rare name, so, you know, to find that one particular one, I couldn't find anything.
This sounds ace.
Yeah, another one that I've not even heard of.
Yeah, it's a genuinely good film. It's full of heart and It's just such lovely performances. Rebecca Hall is amazing. She should be in everything. Mm. She's so good.
I'm going to watch it just for a very light and subtle performance from an actor that I've never seen even that subtle.
Michael
or
Peña.
Serious.
Michael Peña as well. I do like it. I mean, we'll ignore the fact he did Chips earlier this year, but...
Yeah, like everyone else did.
So another for the list then. So I'm taking two of yours today to watch.
Yeah.
And none of yours.
Well, screw you.
I'll end mine today with a sex addiction film. And it's not Shame. Sorry. It's Don John.
Ah!
I've not seen this one.
No, neither have I.
So the man himself, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, has done a Tommy Wiseau. He stars in it, he writes it, and he directed it. So he went full board like The Room. But don't get me wrong, it's not as good as The Room. This is all about a guy that is absolutely addicted to masturbating, an absolute sex fiend in the way that he goes out and he'll only pull chicks, this is his words, that are 8 or above. That's his whole philosophy of going out, that he's only going to pull women to that standard. I think he wanks something like 20 times a day. It's not many, you know what I mean? It's obsessive, but we get this really heartwarming story where he does want to go out and find a normal life and find love and find a relationship, and he meets a character called Barbara and starts to fall in love and have a normal relationship, but the sex addiction takes over. The weirdness of his sex life and the fantasies he comes up with and the stuff he wants to do puts her off, so he loses her, and you know, you see this despair. So he meets another character called Esther and you think this is going to be great, you know, he's going to do it again, and it happens again and again, and whatever he does and however far he goes, he will never get over this very messed up mindset of just treating women like a sexual object and just literally masturbating all day every day. That's it. That's all he wants. That is his way of being fulfilled in life.
Oh, so it doesn't pull a name out of the pot then?
Unfortunately not.
Oh. So isn't Scarlett Johansson in this one? Is she the woman who saves him, turns him around?
Well, yeah, tries. Mm. And she's beautiful in this and very, very good performance. But what I really like about this, and I said it earlier on when I talked about Trainspotting, is have you both seen the film Shame?
Yes.
No.
Okay, that film again is all about sex addiction, but in this film we get John's character narrating his whole story, so you get very intimate with him, not too intimate that he wants to wank you off, but intimate in the way that you understand why he's doing it, and you get inside his head, where Shame, you don't know anything about the character, and they make him look quite bad.
He's really closed off, isn't he?
Exactly that. In this, you are inside his head the whole way through, and I think that does help in these addiction films. In Trainspotting, you can kind of think, oh, I know what Renton's going through, and in this I'm like, I know why John's doing it now. But again, it ends in despair. We don't get the happy ending. We don't get the nice payoff. Don't be dirty.
Sorry.
And this is what all these films are about. They are not Hollywood nice. Yay, it all worked out okay. He stopped wanking and found true love and had kids and lived happily ever after. It's no. He's staying in and rubbing his red rocket.
I'd love that to be the tagline for the film.
A man finds his red rocket and doesn't stop rubbing. I'll buy it.
Clearly have.
I don't think you're going to go and watch that, are you?
I can't watch films about sex. I'm a prude.
Okay.
I'm not joking. I can't. I don't feel comfortable watching films like that. And Shame. They make me feel icky.
That's fair enough.
Shame.
Social media time. So we've got CAT podcast at cinematic_@ said Requiem for a Dream, Shame, and Half Nelson.
Ooh.
Brilliant film with Ryan Gosling. Brian Shampoo-3B at Shampoo19 said Clockwork Orange for violence. I can say that.
Yeah, they are violence addicts.
Blow and Chasing the Dragon.
Never seen it, but obviously I wonder what that's about.
Rhymes with Schmerowin. TCR podcast at Tipsy Review says American Psycho. Less Than Zero and Rachel Getting Married.
Less Than Zero, superb.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's funny because Robert Downey Jr., it's a very early Robert Downey Jr. film where he plays a drug addict, and this was kind of the time where he genuinely was one in real life, so it's, you know, art imitating life.
Wow,
it's really
good.
Look how
effective he is on screen.
And Robert California's in it.
Hey!
I'm going to be watching so many films after today.
Spadercast. Rob at Rob_Dan said Natural Born Killers, Blow and Wonderland.
Wonderland is good. So that porn book I was telling you about last week,
and
talking about John Holmes, that film Wonderland is about John Holmes being involved in the Wonderland murders, where this drug dealer ended up killing a load of people and he let them into the house and all this kind of stuff. Stars Val Kilmer, really good film.
Another one.
Get that list on. Russ Cook at Cook Butterfly, Less Than Zero, Train Spotting and Clean and Sober.
I think that's the Michael Keaton one.
I think it is as well. Liz Marshall at @_LizMarshall said Limitless, Train Spotting, and Misery. And in her defence, she said addicted to books.
If you want to, you can sell it like that. That's absolutely fine.
I think so too. And then we had from Facebook, Lee Morgan said The Panic in Needle Park, Al Pacino, very good film, Requiem for a Dream, and Leaving Las Vegas. So agreed with us. And then finally, Chris Duck said Train Spotting, Rush, the 1991 one, not the Formula One one. Law ones, and Ravenous.
Not seen that either.
No, I don't know Ravenous.
I don't think I've seen any film. It's pretty poor. This is the one topic that's really made me realise I need to up my game.
Hey, but we know we've got a heck of a lot of films that we want to go out and watch. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good show.
Next topic is Ben, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my turn. We're going to do something entirely different. So every single topic we've done over the last 71 episodes has been about films we've seen, obviously. So let's do something different. Next time, come to me with your top three films that you will never, ever see.
Oh.
And more importantly, why? We've been to our local View cinema to see Alien Covenant, the latest film in the long-running Alien franchise. The crew of the Covenant are on a deep space mission to colonise a distant planet, but after they intercept a mysterious signal, they land on an alien world to find the origin of the transmission. Here they find the remnants of the Prometheus mission and a whole lot of trouble. The film is Ridley Scott's return to this alien world after Prometheus, and the film stars Michael Fassbender, Catherine Waterston, Billy Crudup, Danny McBride, and much, much more. I'm going to throw this to Mark first of all, because Mark, I know you're a big fan of the Alien franchise in general, and I know that you, like myself, are a big fan of Prometheus. We both think that it was a highly underrated film. So that being said, do you think this film lives up to the reputation that was set by the first couple of Alien films and by Prometheus?
No, it doesn't.
No, why not?
It was a mess. And I'm going to be completely brutal and very honest here. So, as you know, Aliens is one of my favourite films. It's the only film, I think, since we've launched that's never come out of the top five. It's absolutely nailed on. I absolutely adore it. And yeah, Prometheus gets ripped apart and I don't understand. This film for me started as, yep, this is Prometheus 2. This is pretty good. We're seeing nice cinematography, big landscapes. We're getting to see the characters again. And it just fell to pieces. I just didn't understand why he had to shoehorn all these aliens in and just go, don't worry, fans, I know you didn't like it in the last film, so here's loads of aliens and loads of attacks, and it's a horror film. So I was like, well, this is sci-fi for the first half an hour. This is pretty good. I'm getting to understand what's going on. Now it's a horror. Oh, now we're going back to sci-fi. Now it's just getting messy. This is really shit now. I don't know anything about the story or what's going on. The characters aren't doing anything for me because all we're focusing on is these alien attacks again. This is shit.
Wow. Don't hold back, mate. Gemma, thoughts?
My heart hurts because I love the Alien series and I'm with you guys. I thought Prometheus was great, but I didn't like this. And I was really rooting for it. It was like getting a jigsaw. You're putting all the pieces together. Once it's all completed, none of them fit.
Exactly like that.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I found the first half really dull, if I'm honest. I thought it was really, really boring. And then the tense moments, they are tense and they're amplified and they're loud and they're scary. But wholly disappointing. No, really disappointing.
Yeah, I echo everything you've both said. I was thoroughly, thoroughly disappointed with it. I wasn't engaged with the film at any point. I think when it tried to be more like Prometheus, as you said, Mark, it kind of worked. But when it tried to be more like Alien, it didn't work. The actual alien attacks weren't filmed particularly well. There were no jump scares. You know, you're supposed to be seeing these aliens coming out of nowhere and you're supposed to be flying backwards in your seat. There was none of that. And the main reason for it for me was because there was no claustrophobia. One of the things that makes the first two Alien films work so well is you're on these ships or these mining colonies or whatever. You're in these dark, tight hallways and the aliens are coming out of the dark from behind you. With this, a lot of the alien battles took place outdoors or on big, on the roof of ships type of thing. And it just didn't have that claustrophobia for me. It just didn't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other major thing why it didn't work for me was just there was no strong lead. I love Catherine Watson. I think she's a great actress, but she was no Ellen Ripley. She was not even an Elizabeth Shaw from Prometheus. Shaw was a much better character, and I wish they would have brought her back. There was no lead. There was no focal point. It was just a mess. Actually, I think that was the first word you used, Mark. It was just a mess for me.
And how annoying is that? Because we were really, really rooting for this, as you just said, Gemma. I really wanted this to be good because Prometheus is good. So what's changed over the last few years? I know he's come out and said stuff like, oh, he made some mistakes. He realises it shouldn't have been a alien film. He should have took it away and just done his own piece of, well, like The Martian, just a good sci-fi film that stands alone on its own. I just think he wanted to please the fans and give us these killings that we used to get in Aliens and Alien in the 70s and 80s, but we don't need them now. We don't need to try and be shocked and scared. And when he did do it, like Ben just said, we weren't actually scared or jumping out of our seats like we did with the first ever chest burster or the first alien attack or the face hugger. I remember the first time seeing that, genuinely being terrified of, like, even just a cat walking in the room. Oh my God, like, anything that could jump on my face and kill me with its tail around my neck is scary.
You know what? That's the problem. There was too much. There was too much of it. The alien killings are always notoriously off camera, and there was just too much of it. And I think that's one of the main problems.
Yeah, it loses its power if you see it too often. And as you've kind of suggested there, it was a greatest hits. We saw a facehugger attack, you know, we saw a chestburster. It was a greatest hits. It was like a remix compilation of an alien film.
Including those hybrids.
Yeah.
New material never works.
Oh, don't get me started on those goddamn hybrids, though. So the bit where the one comes out of Billy Crudup and he looks like a little marionette, a little puppet bouncing around on strings. I've got to say, I thought the CGI, and I don't know if any of it was animatronic, but I thought it was really ropey. I thought it looked cheap as hell.
Yeah, and the thing is with these aliens, they don't look anything like the original aliens we've ever seen. They are literally shiny and silver at parts.
Yeah.
And it looked like a kitted out, like someone had spent loads of money, like a boy racer, on this alien and sprayed it silver and made it look as glorious as possible. Yeah, and it really did. It was like, this isn't how an alien should be. And then when we finally see them stand up upright on its 2 feet like a human, all I thought was, that is a human person in a bodysuit which looks slightly moulded like an alien, and I hated it. Yeah. And I thought at that point, I actually hate this film right now, because I don't want to see an alien staring out a human being up on its 2 feet as a human, putting its chest up. It's not a fucking bodybuilder. It's an alien that should be ripping your head off.
Yeah, like the baby one where it raises its arms because David's done it. It's like a really cheap aerobics class.
Yeah. I mean, I liked, in a way, that whole thing about how the alien, or rather the android David, is then, we find out he's the creator of the alien creatures. You know, he found this black mist crap and then used it on animals, and then he created the, I think they're called neomorphs, these sort of mid-range ones that we hadn't seen before, and they eventually become the xenomorphs and so on. I like that. I like that he has a reason to be there, and we have this prologue at the start of the film that shows him. He's not long been made by Weyland, and Weyland's basically like, I'm your creator and we want to find who created us. And then he realises he doesn't want to just be someone's slave, he wants to be a creator too, and that's why he creates these aliens. I think that whole that thematically worked for me, but the rest of the film just didn't deliver on the promise of that, and actually seeing the neomorph, and it just looked terrible. That one that was white, the neomorph one, it didn't look like an alien. It looked more like something from Pan's Labyrinth to me.
Yes.
You know, the little creature with the hand eyes.
Did that.
Yeah. It just didn't work, and I found it unintentionally funny in a lot of places, and it really shouldn't have been.
That line, I'll do the fingering.
Oh my God. So the scene where the two androids, David and Walter, David's teaching Walter to play the flute, and he's like, you blow and I'll do the fingering. Good God
Giggity.
Almighty.
What disappointed me at that bit was only you think me and Ben laughed at that point in the cinema, and I was like,
too.
I heard you as well, but I just thought, oh, okay, we're a bit immature here. This isn't very good.
Best line ever.
That whole scene, though, the two of them playing flute together, was one of the most unintentionally homoerotic scenes I've seen in film.
Remember, he plants a kiss on him as well, on himself.
And again, it was one of those where I got it that it worked thematically, but it didn't work dramatically. So thematically, it was supposed to be David saying to Walter, who's a newer version of an android, you know, David's have the ability to create, but Walter's don't. And he was showing him how he can play the flute to show that you can create too. So the theme is there. But in practice, the drama wasn't. It was stupid. It was laughable.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm going to give it praise is Fassbender. So as we're just talking about, obviously, David and Walter, I do believe that he was captivating in every scene. He is unbelievable as an actor. I absolutely adore him. And when Ben was saying out loud then the story about how he was I'm like, this sounds amazing. Like, Ben, this is like an audiobook. I'm listening to you talking about this film and it sounds unbelievable. Take all the alien shit away that's, you know, 40 minutes in and these attacks. That story would bloody work. Yeah. That he mauls this guy and then they kind of do a heel turn and they turn around. And they genuinely, which one's the master? We see the swap, and that's a really good sci-fi film.
Mm-hmm.
Take the aliens out, dude. You did pretty much in Prometheus. We don't need to see them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then just do a separate Alien film.
Yeah, the one that Neil Blomkamp wanted to do with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. Get involved with that.
But they've said that's dead now.
Pity.
And, you know, well, let's give it some praise then. So Fassbender was unbelievable in every scene. I loved him.
My only problem with Fassbender, it wasn't him actually, it's the film and the misuse of David. So there's this swerve at the end, massive spoiler alert here, where you think that Walter has killed David and then Walter gets back on the ship with the remaining crew members and flies off. But then it turns out that it wasn't Walter, it's David dressed up as Walter. Dun, 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 what a shock, what a surprise. Except that it wasn't a shock or surprise at all, because you see a bit earlier in the film where Walter gets stabbed through the neck and then his wound heals. So we know that Walter has these regenerative powers. When David comes back onto the ship in Walter's disguise, he's got scratch marks down his face. If it would have been Walter, they would have healed. It's such a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
It's not a reveal. It's not a shock. They telegraphed it from a mile off.
It was too obvious.
Yeah.
You could see it coming from a mile. There was signposts saying, hello, heel turn.
Coming up in 10 minutes. Mm. Yeah, and that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because it's, again, do you know what really annoyed me, right? So we see these alien attacks, and in the trailer, we see these two people in a shower, the tail go up and attack these two people. A typical death that we get in horror films. We see the water, we see the blood. I saw that in the trailer, that scene. Yeah. So I knew that when they're going back to the ship, which is about an hour and a half into the film, there is going to be survivors, because I've not seen that bit yet that was in the trailer.
Yeah.
You need to think about this when you're putting films out there, because it does actually spoil it for me. Because I'm like, is there anyone else on the ship? Well, of course there is, because there's that bit in the trailer I haven't seen. And it's not just me that said this. I've read reviews and people are saying, come on, man. Like, don't spoil everything for us. It's frustrating.
They don't think it through, do they? They give away too much. On that tag, with that particular scene, one of the things that really pissed me off about that is that alien creature that is loose on the ship towards the back end and then killing the remaining crew members, that comes out of the chest of like this sergeant played by Demian Bashir, and it's a fully grown one.
Yes.
How could an alien that came out of his chest be bigger than he was?
Mm-hmm.
They need to grow. Like, the other ones that came out of chest were tiny little, looked like little rabbits. And then they
very much like rabbits. They watershed down rabbits.
They were terrible. Yeah. And then they grew, got bigger, and became you know, these full-grown aliens. So how the fuck did this 6'5" alien come out of the chest of a 5'11" man? It makes no sense.
Protein shake and roids. You're right, though. And do you know what? This big battle that we come to at the very end of the film, so this big queen alien is on top of the actual spaceship and we think, right, this is going to be it now. This is a 10-20 minute battle. Was it over in 4 minutes?
Yeah. Must have been.
It didn't put up a fight. It was like, oh, no. I'm going to try and attack you. Ripley, the new Ripley, goes on board to try and save it.
Nope.
She fucks up and falls over. But don't worry, we'll grab with the first try, grab with this claw, get the alien and crush it. And I was like, are you serious? This massive battle where we normally expect in Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, we have these 25-minute battles that you're... That's what it's all about, a good action horror film where you get all this blood and who's going to win? It was over before it started. It was ridiculous.
And I kind of think that's why Daniels isn't as good a character as Ripley or even as Ward, because she wasn't given enough to do. Anytime she was called upon to be a badass, it was over in 2 minutes. We needed to see her getting down and dirty and, you know, feeling like she was going to lose and but then survives. There was none of that. She just got through it quite easily.
Obviously, grief was the main focus of her motivation throughout the whole film, but surely you could turn that grief into power, like you said, and just start commandeering everybody else. At the end of the film, we see her reluctantly accept the captainship of the colony. I wasn't convinced. She is the weakest out of the three. Shaw had balls. Ripley had big balls.
But that's with all of the characters in this film. Apart from Fassbender, there was no character development.
No
one had enough screen time to actually give a shit about them.
No.
Hey, Franco had about 15 seconds.
The James Franco cameo was utterly worthless.
Yeah.
He literally dies in the first couple of scenes, and then you see one flashback of him on a camera, and that's it. It's like, why bother?
I bet he got like $1 million for that.
Of course he did. But he's not a big enough or interesting enough name to do a cameo.
No. Maybe Will Ferrell.
Well, that would have worked.
That would be great.
See, we joke, but Danny McBride's in it. McBride's in it. You know, Kenny Powers.
And I love Kenny Powers.
Me too.
He is a character that everybody should check out. If you've never seen Eastbound and Down, stop listening to us now and go and watch that and come back, because that is three series of very good, funny television. But let's be honest about it. Danny McBride is Danny McBride in pretty much everything. We love him, but he is that humorous. And he's that in this, and we can't take him seriously. And he is still a bit of a dick. He's got his like cowboy hat on. He's making a few throwaway punchlines and stuff, and still being a bit of a dick, but he doesn't work. He seems out of place for me.
I quite liked him.
Yeah, I thought he was fine.
That's because you like him.
No, but I was fully expecting him to be full on Kenny Powers and like wisecracking and being a dick, and he wasn't. He played it straight for me. The one thing maybe that let him down is when his wife died. I didn't really buy his emotion that he was broken up, that his missus had just died. But other than that, I thought he did a good job.
I liked him in the straight role. I thought, after seeing films like Your Majesty, This Is the End.
Your Highness.
Yeah. Oh, is it Your Highness? Yeah. Oh, Christ. Yeah, sorry.
Because Majesty's not a drugs pun, whereas right. Highness is.
I blocked it out because it was goddamn terrible. But I like the straight guy. I really enjoyed him. I thought he worked, and I would have been interested to see what Tennessee would bring in a future Alien franchise, which I'm sure there's going to be, but I'm now questioning, should there be?
Perhaps I was too angry at that point still from it's seeing fine. Those shiny,
oh, it's rope, fine.
Absolute ridiculous aliens right. that don't scare me.
No.
You had every right to.
And we've already touched on the fact that it's kind of fan service shoehorning in the aliens, and I think Ridley Scott's gone too far with that, because he's even said that there is going to be another one that will bridge the gap between this and Alien. Nope. He's saying to the people, don't worry, you know, it's the George Lucas syndrome. It's the here are your prequels because you need to know where Darth Vader came from. Here are your prequels because you need to know how Ripley first came in contact with the aliens. So we don't necessarily need to, because those films work on their own. Do Prometheus, let it be its own thing. I wanted to know more about the engineers. This is what pisses me off. Because at the end of Prometheus, you see the characters that are now referred to as the engineers, these big bald things, and you think, shit, who are they? How are they involved in this world? What's going on? And then at the start of this film, they all get killed.
Yeah.
David wipes out their entire home planet.
And when cool. I see them all, I was literally like, I literally got a semi. I was like, here they are. We're going to find out more. And the scene was beautiful. It was night. It was like a blue shine across them all. And they looked incredible. And that point, the CGI did look good because there's about 10 million of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, finally, wicked. 10 seconds later, zoom. What?
It was a dick move.
Done. Gone.
Dead.
Mm.
Like his career. He's going to have to struggle to come back from this, because he took this from Blomkamp, who I like. And I think that would have been in the safe hands to put an alien film. And I saw the concept art he did and the story ideas, and I think it needs fresh blood.
I think it would have been, if he did sort of commandeer that, I think it would have been more like Aliens. I think it would have been a lot more action heavy, mm-hmm. Sold. Which would have been great.
Done.
Yeah.
But instead, we got Alien Inconvenience.
Yes, exactly that. And not Prometheus 2.
Nope.
Prometheus poo.
Shall we score it? I think we've said all we really can say about it at this point. Gemma.
This is sadly disappointing. It's not the worst film of the year, but it didn't deliver on the promise that it gave out when the trailers were out. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
Wow. I was left very unsatisfied. I went in with very, very high expectations. So I'm going to be a bit more lenient. So it's a 6, because I think 5 is brutal.
I am brutal, though. I'm
no, it's
savage.
Good though, yeah, but 6 is still not great.
Yeah, and that's where I've got it as well, as 6. I was just so disappointed. I was so up for it. Really, really up for it after loving Prometheus. So disappointed. So that overall gives it a skip to the end, 6 out of 10.
Oh, guys, I've left my watch at home. I don't suppose you know what time it is, do you?
I suppose it might be
competition time! Beautiful. Sorry about your eardrums, every listener out there. You can't sue us because we don't make any money. But hey, it's time to give away lots of nice prizes and announce the winners from the competition from episode 70. So let's kick things off with a Dark Bunny bundle for the film Back to the Future. Not just one t-shirt, they gave us the whole bundle, which consists of 3 t-shirts. You've probably seen the designs on the internet.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Unbelievable. Made it very, very easy. We said, what was the surname of Marty in Back to the Future? So do you know that?
Could be McFly.
It is. I mean, I think we even put it out there and said it's a band.
Yeah.
I think I might have even said it was who
you
it
did.
Was.
You,
yeah.
You just said it. Yeah.
Brilliant. So Helen Everett on Facebook got that right, and you'll be getting those t-shirts in the post soon. Howie, our good friend from Richer Sounds, sorted us out with some Cambridge Audio SE1 headphones, those 120 quid 5-star watt hi-fi ones. This took a little bit of research, and people got this wrong as well, because they thought the question I put out was, what episode did Gemma officially join Skip to the End? And people were like, oh, episode 17 or whatever it was, when you first came on as a bit of a cameo.
Yeah, that's an incorrect answer, isn't
so it? So it is actually episode 51, and Martin Street got that right, so he'll be getting those headphones in the post, and that's been one of our most popular comps, because those, you've seen the pictures of those headphones.
Yeah.
They're better
sweet.
Than the shit we're wearing. Take note, Richard.
Hint.
Our good friends Warner Brothers, they sent us a bundle which consisted of lots of nice Blu-rays. So there was Citizen Kane, Dog Day Afternoon, Deliverance, The Right Stuff, Cool Hand Luke. There was absolutely loads, and that big starlight you probably saw, I put the pictures up. Mm-hmm. You won that whole thing. Real simple question as well. What rating did we give Free Fire, Ben?
9.
We sound very confident there, don't you? You're right, dude. It was a 9. So Camilla Townsend's going to be getting that. And you've probably seen loads of people this week, even wrestlers and stuff, having our keyrings. Have you seen that? John Cena was having one the other day. It was unbelievable. And we had Groot and everyone. So you've probably seen, we've been announcing online those people. But as always, I've still got lots and lots to give away. So let's kick things off with more Dark Bunny stuff. They've given us, to go nicely with this episode, an Aliens Glow in the Dark t-shirt. But it's not to do with the new Aliens film. It's the original Aliens.
Oh, good.
So it's pretty cool and you want to wear it with pride. Let's make it really, really simple. Who directed the original Alien? Not Aliens, Alien. Also, our good friends are back on board from Disney for Pirates of the Caribbean 5. We've got an unbelievable bundle to give away. It consists of a big pint glass shaped like this skull that's on the poster. There's a notebook, a journal, a t-shirt and a bag. Let's make it really simple again. Who plays Jack Sparrow in those films? Very, very simple. I want to give away some more headphones because Howie said that due to the demand of, you know, seeing all these tweets and people wanting them, but I want people to work for them. So we're going to give another set away of these £120 SE1 headphones. Where did Skip to the End get their name from?
Nice.
That's good. So that's not just any dick on Twitter trying to enter every single competition we do. Yeah. This is a
That's hard graft. That's graft.
And I honestly don't even know what episode we reveal that on, so that's the sort of fan you need to be. That's you don't even know that, do you?
I do.
You know what episode we announced it? No. And lastly, I don't want to stop these keyrings yet. We've got about 30 or 40 left. We're giving 10 away. So let's just say the next sort of 5 or 6 iTunes ratings we get, we'll give them away because we're getting loads of them now and they're really nice, thorough ones. Not just like, oh, great podcast. You're not getting one. When you put some heart and soul into the review, we'll reward you. That sounds fair, doesn't
it? You're not getting one.
You're not getting one. But you've seen these photos, haven't you? They're like the t-shirts. People are taking a lot of time. I saw one on a spice rack. I've seen one on... What else have I seen them? I've seen them everywhere this week. They're unbelievable.
I know you mentioned the one about John Cena, but I'm surprised you saw that.
Nice. I just saw it floating.
Oh.
That was great.
People who don't watch wrestling won't get that joke at all.
Yeah, and all kids will, and they shouldn't be listening. So what we'll do then, we'll announce the winners all again in 2 weeks' time.
You know what segment it is? It's Movie Masturbate. What we do is we pick a name from the pot and we discuss our favourite performance from said actor/actress. So on the last episode, we picked out Denzel Washington, a very kind of stoic actor. He's been around in a lot of films. And so what we're going to do is we're going to discuss which one's our favourite of his and why we liked him so much. So I think the person that is going to discuss this first is... Ben!
Picking Ben again first! Bloody hell!
Favouritism, isn't it?
So who got you the bloody card?
did you not get it, Ben?
No! Screw Ben!
Thank you, Gemma. I'm honoured to go first.
Thank you.
I've gone with a very, very recent one. I've gone with Fences from last year. As our regular listeners will know, we watched all of the major Oscar-nominated films during Oscar season, and we talked about this briefly, and I was absolutely blown away. I didn't think I was going to like this film, mainly because it's based on a play, and that's usually a sign that something's going to be really boring. But it was genuinely brilliant. It's one of the most ferociously intense performances I've ever seen Washington give. He is never anything less than magnetic. And because it's based on a play, he has these long monologues, very, very wordy monologues, that a lesser actor wouldn't have been able to follow through on. But he delivers them so majestically because he is arguably the best in the business. It's a breathtaking performance. And he's up against Viola Davis, who also just nails everything she has to do in that film. The two of them together, the chemistry and the back and forth, it's absolutely sublime. And it's no surprise, really, because he actually did this on stage as well. He did hundreds of performances of this, so he was able to hone that character and hone that performance to perfection. And it's magnificent. And he really should have won the Oscar. You know, I think Casey Affleck was very, very good in Manchester by the Sea, but I don't think that performance was anywhere near as good as this. I think Washington was robbed, as his face will have displayed when Casey's name was read out, because he did not look happy.
And the rest of us.
And the rest of us, yeah. But it's a magnificent performance. I think you both saw it, didn't you?
Yes, I tried my best to go to the cinema as much as I could and get all of the Oscar films done, but this is one of the ones that I came out, no expectations going in, just like, this will be all right, but it looks boring. Came out, like you said, Ben, and I remember us both talking on the way home, saying, literally, this is awesome. Literally, yeah. What a great film that was. And he deserves that Oscar. And even though people should on the camera smile and be like, oh, I'm really happy for Ryan Gosling to win over me, really, they're thinking, fuck you, Gosling. In this case, you know, watching Affleck go up, I think he was totally robbed. I think there's no... I don't know. I'm actually clueless here right now why he won it over him. I don't know.
There's such a fire in Washington's belly when you watch this.
Yeah.
So intense. He owns every single scene. You're not looking at anything else on that screen apart from his face while he's delivering those powerful lines.
Amazing.
It's beautiful.
This has really opened my eyes up to how much of an amazing actor he is. You know he is good. He's got Oscars, but you don't realise how good he is until you start researching for Masturbate.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So what's your choice, Mark?
Man on Fire.
Ooh. Great film.
Absolutely unbelievable movie. And I picked this basically because I think he portrays three very strong personalities in this film. At the start, we get this down and out, low key, real drunk fella that basically is a former mercenary, and we just see this really down and out guy that's got nothing going for him. But then when he's taken on this role of being a bodyguard and protecting this girl and the bad life in Mexico, we see a completely different character. We get this father-loving type that basically wants to do everything he can for this girl, and we see this complete change in him where you're just like, that is still the same actor, but this is far, far above what we've just seen for the first third of this film. And then the end, we get this brutal maniac that basically goes out on this revenge, looking to basically get blood and get his girl back, and you just think, how in 2 hours have we seen these three characters, all from Denzel, that are so different to each other, but they're the same human? You're not like, oh, he's just being a bit stupid and over the top. You believe every bit of it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable film. Absolutely phenomenal. And is it Dakota Fanning in
it
this
is.
Film?
Yeah.
What a performance. And I know we shouldn't be talking about other actors and Masturbate, but you need to. In this film, she is phenomenal. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. And no, I think it is right to talk about others, because often who you're up against can bring out the best in you. That's what delivers a great performance from you, because you're up against other good people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unbelievable point. Okay, so he's up against the two kings of cool. Christopher Walken, which is an unbelievable actor, and hopefully one day we can masturbate over him. And Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
Those two.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? That's not an easy, you know, you're up against these two. Okay, let's see what we can do here. And Quentin Tarantino has gone on record to say that he thinks this is Tony Scott's finest ever film. And I agree.
And Tarantino is known to be the biggest Tony Scott fanboy on earth. He was one of his idols. Like, that's why when Tony Scott ended up directing True Romance, Tarantino was over the moon. Yeah. He knows his Scott.
So he's there. There he is. You know what I mean? There you go. Like me and Tommy Wiseau.
Exactly like that.
But what a film, man. And it what was so good, again, is I haven't seen this film for a few years. I wanted to double check my choice and make sure it's definitely that film still. Watched it, and as soon as it finished, I was like, I want to watch it again.
Yeah.
And that just speaks volumes. What an unbelievable film. And it's never the happy ending. And it isn't. What a horrible ending.
Oh,
if you're listening right now, I'm not going to spoil it. Go and watch the film, because it's not your typical, brilliant, he saved the day film. It's great.
It is.
There will be tears.
Come on then, what have you got?
I've gone for a more recent one, and I've gone for Whip Whittaker in Flight.
Oh, yeah. Really good film.
And another addiction movie.
Yeah.
When Very I was doing clever. My research. It's about a high-flying airline pilot who has a bit of a booze and a slight drug addiction on the side, but he's revered because he's this amazing pilot who flies all around the world, gets the nice, good-looking, attractive stewardess as a bit of a side piece. But all of that changes one day when there's a problem on one of the engines that he's flying. So he has to ultimately fly upside down to save as many people as possible. So there are deaths, but he ends up saving a lot more people rather than wiping out the entire crew and passengers on board. What follows is an unravelling of a man. So he is heralded as a hero, but what they also have to do is understand why he did the actions he did that day. So it unearths this alcohol and drug problem that he has. A lot of people are trying to ask, you know, well, is this true? Did you have cocaine? Did you have whiskey? And he goes through all of these different processes. He goes through denial, he goes through anger, and finally admittance of his problems. And kind of like what both of you have said, he plays these different aspects of this character so, so well. Any other person that was given this role, I don't think they would have had the guts to do this, or they would have had the chutzpahs. And Washington delivered on every sense. Rightfully, he did lose the Oscar to Daniel Day-Lewis, who won for Lincoln.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Which I didn't have a problem with. But It's the confrontations he has with his wife and kid. He almost mocks them because he still thinks he's above them, but the lives that he destroys around him, he doesn't have an ounce of recognition for it until the very last moment. It is an uplifting end towards the back of the movie, but my God, the journey to get there is just something else.
It is a great performance, and it's interesting because Denzel Washington, because he's a fairly religious guy and he's a happily married man, he tends not to pick roles where he has vices. You know, he tends not to play drug dealers and people who are cheating on their wives and stuff. And I think the opening scene of this film, you see him in bed with a stewardess who's not his wife, and then he does a line of coke and then goes and flies a plane. And it's so far out of his wheelhouse. He wouldn't normally do this because of his personal beliefs, but he obviously believed so much in this role and this character that he was willing to do that and actually perform it, and he does it amazingly.
I think the way how he portrays an addict is one of the most realistic portrayals I've seen. Obviously, with the top three we did earlier on, obviously, everybody knows we do a lot of research, so we watch a lot of films. This didn't make my list because as soon as we picked out Denzel Washington, this was kind of a go-to straight away. But I think this is probably one of the more realistic portrayals of an alcoholic that I've seen in films. Superb.
And again, to big up a co-star, John Goodman is so good in this film.
Oh, yes. And every time he comes onto the screen, Sympathy for the Devil by Rolling Stone plays.
Really?
So it's almost it's like he's this sort of bad, well, obviously he has his own demons, but he's an even worse influence on Whip's character.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So cool.
When you hear this list now from social media, it is astonishing. There's never like an orbit. It's crazy. Yeah. So Tessa at TessieCat has put Flight. Josh Hickman has put Remember the Titans, classic film. Vinyl Richie has put Malcolm X.
Yeah.
That's a great username, by the way.
But what a great film. To do that role is never easy. Sky Movies with an E have put a hidden gem, Ricochet, from 1991.
I've never seen that one.
Okay.
Jim Boyd has put Training Day, which I thought maybe might make some people's lists.
See, I have to take umbrage with that because I don't understand why he won an Oscar for that. I love Denzel Washington, but he was chewing the scenery like it had butter on it. It was ridiculous, hammy acting. I don't know why people love that so much. I just don't get it.
Was it like a Leonardo DiCaprio, like, we owe you one for the last 5 years? It was
precisely that. It's because he didn't win for Hurricane. Oh. So they basically gave it him for this.
There you go. James Botchel has said Crimson Tide. Ray Reviews has put The Equalizer, which I really enjoyed that film. I didn't think I would.
Rubbish.
Do you not like it?
It's terrible.
It's pretty good. I think it's the soundtrack at the intro where he puts his headphones. I like that bit. Simon Daly has put The Hurricane. Jack and the Geekstalk have put Book of Eli. And finally, Ross Miller has put Inside Man.
Really good film.
So many good films, isn't there?
It's not bad.
That was a tough tug. Sorry, a tough masturbate. Yeah.
But are we ready to pull out again?
And whose turn is it? It's not me. I did the last one. Is it you, Gemma?
My turn.
Well, here's the pot then. Do you want me to give us a drum roll?
Are
you ready?
I would love a drum roll.
Again, these mics, man. Listen to that.
So, on the next episode, we will be masturbating to Matt Damon. Matt Damon!
She wore blue velvet, bluer than velvet was the night.
It's now time for the rewatch, and if you'd listened to the last episode, you'll have heard me announce the classic David Lynch film, Blue Velvet. This film basically tells the story of a college student called Jeffrey who returns home to see his sick father that has recently gone through a traumatic stroke. Once he's back home, he discovers a random severed ear in the middle of an abandoned field. Very random indeed. He basically then teams up with a detective called Sandy to try and solve the mystery behind this severed ear. During the investigation, they believe that a singer called Dorothy may be connected with this case. Once they spend more and more time with this girl, they are then drawn into a very dark, twisted world where they encounter a very, very sexually deprived psychopath called Frank Booth. The story then goes off in all various different areas and different directions, and if anyone here is a fan of David Lynch, you'll understand that this guy does what he wants and doesn't get told how to do a story, and this is very, very relevant when watching this film. Gemma, you're a big David Lynch fan.
I am.
Ben, you're not massively. You're kind of just starting to get into some of his work, and I'm sure with Twin Peaks coming back, you're going to be hearing a lot more about him.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're throwing this to Ben every time, but because he's never seen... Well, he's your favourite.
Oh, come on.
Give the people what they want, though.
But Ben's never seen this film. He's literally... And we say it, but he's never watched this film. So I want to go there to hear this initial... Enough. Is he like it? Yeah. Does he hate it? Ben, Blue Velvet, talk to me.
I did not like this film at all. I found it painfully, interminably dull. It was just a dull, dull film punctuated by brief spasms of sex and violence. I don't know what the fuss is about. Really disliked it.
So is it a fact that, do you think if you'd watched it many years ago, do you think it's because you've seen so many good films recently and more? Is it just a case of you didn't watch it at the time or...
No, boring. Just... Boring never changes. Boring's always boring. Dull.
Didn't do anything for you at all.
It did nothing for me. The film started to pick up when Frank turned up, Dennis Hopper's character, but he turns up 42 minutes in. So those first 42 minutes, it was like watching an Emmerdale omnibus.
If you see Emmerdale with a severed ear and major hardcore sex with family members, then okay, let me know when I can watch that. Is that on the
Did you not see that episode of Emmerdale?
Is that on like ITV 2 at 10 o'clock?
It is, yeah.
When they used to do Hollyoaks, didn't they? Like the
Hollyoaks
evening
late,
one.
Yeah.
So, not a fan.
New.
Gemma.
I loved it.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
It's edgy viewing that lingers with you once the credits have finished. I found myself thinking about this film a good few days after I originally watched it. And there's an ugly beauty to the film. The subject is so hardcore and so terrifying that when you watch this film, it's glossed with such beautiful visionary and colours. It's like the American dream being distorted with the American nightmare, and I, for one, loved it.
Wow. I love this film as well. Yeah. I've seen it many times. It's a typical film that any film student would have seen and ripped to pieces and analysed and probably done a dissertation on it.
I did.
There you go, exactly that. But what really freaks me out about this film is you can't label it as anything. It's not a drama, it's not a satire, it's not a black comedy, it's not a thriller. I don't know what the hell it's about.
It's not a movie.
But I love it, and I think David Lynch as a director and a writer is fascinating, and he is probably your Marmite guy. I bet some people will love Twin Peaks and be obsessed with it, and it's their life, and other people will just be like, it's wank. And that might be you, Ben. When you start watching Twin Peaks, you might be like, that, it's just not for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've rather missed the cultural boat on Twin Peaks. So I've seen 3 or 4 episodes over the years, but I'm determined to watch all of Twin Peaks and then watch the new stuff as well, because I feel like I've missed the boat. It's not Lynch that I have the problem with this film. I think the direction is great. There are a couple of shots specifically that I think are brilliant. So to pick up Gemma's idea of the American dream being tinged with the American nightmare, at the start of the film, we have the main character's dad. He's out mowing the lawn, and he's got this beautifully manicured lawn. He's got the white picket fence, pure Americana. Then he collapses on the floor, and the camera zooms into the grass, and then beneath the grass, you see the insects crawling underneath. And that's the American nightmare underneath. It's what's going on. It's the seedy underbelly of the town. That's a great little metaphor for the whole film. I love that. There's another magnificent shot where Carl McLaughlin's character's first coming out of this detective's house, and you just hear a voice off screen, and it's Laura Dern's character, and you don't see her because she's in the dark, and then she gradually, over the course of about 5 or 6 seconds, just steps out of the dark and into the light, and it's a beautiful, beautiful shot, and she looks like a million bucks. The film is directed magnificently. It's the acting. It's the acting I have a problem with. Carl McLaughlin is a great actor now. Then, not so much.
He's a damn fine actor.
Yes, damn fine coffee. It's so wooden. He is so, so wooden. I just didn't believe a word that came out of his mouth. But he wasn't even the worst. Isabella Rossellini. Jesus Christ. That woman cannot act. Couldn't act her way out of a paper bag. She overacts wildly. And I'm not just talking about this film. At least McLaughlin got better in his career. She didn't.
Yeah.
Anything I've ever seen, Isabella Rossellini, and she overacts wildly, and she just drives me insane. Can't stand the woman.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
I want to save something then. So talk to me more about Frank Boo, because I don't think there's much more of a more sinister, evil, terrible baddie. And if we revisited a topic and did our top 3 villains, this guy is haunting. He stayed with me. Yeah. He really disturbed me when watching him. And it's not just the mask and everything. He's just vile.
Yeah, baby wants to fuck.
Oh, rude. God, that was just too much.
Yeah, he's scary. He's unnerving. He's the boogeyman that lives in your nightmares. He's the monster that lives under your bed, in your closet, and will only come out in the dark because that's the only time he feels comfortable. He says, turn down the lights. I want it to be the dark. And that's the representation of evil for me.
He just oozes it, doesn't he? He is evil.
But there's so much charisma that comes out of him, though. He's just engaging, but like if you drive past a car accident, you don't want to look. That's exactly what Frank Booth is. He is the epitome of a car accident. Just
a sex-themed version of a car accident.
A thing for materials and oxygen.
He's such a unique character, isn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. I love Dennis Hopper and everything, and I do think Frank is a magnificent character. It's well written, it's well acted, but again, it comes down to a bit of visual flair. The whole thing of him carrying that tank of amyl nitrate around him, just a huff on that, that's just a great little visual gimmick that... It's what puts him over the top as this legendary villain. If he wasn't huffing on that stuff all the way through the film, he'd still be a great villain, but people wouldn't talk about him as much. It's that additional visual of him with that mask on his face that makes him unique. And that's a great little touch from Lynch. I suppose
it's like the Mad Max thing, isn't it, with the whole face mask. Do you not think? Instantly you think of that iconic mask over his face. It's just harrowing. It's that horrible, awful... I can't believe I'm comparing Mad Max to Blue Velvet.
But it almost makes him guarded. It's almost like his weakness, in a way. So he protects that weakness.
We don't get much dialogue from him, do we, either? And when he does speak, it's just horrible. It's just like, you don't want to hear him. He's just vile.
It's just fuck this, fuck
that. Yeah, he's just absolutely disgusting. He's not the sort of person you want to take home to meet your parents.
Not so much, no.
I don't know.
Because he'd fuck him.
He says, I will fuck anything.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right, yeah.
You're calling my parents anything now.
But that's Jeffrey's fear. Jeffrey's worried that he's eventually going to turn into a character such as Frank when Dorothy demands that Jeffrey hits her during a sex time they have. Or
a sex time. One of those sex times they
it's
have.
It's 9:45. It's sex time. And he's worried that he's eventually getting sucked into this underworld that Frank and his cronies are in or they've created. It's the dark side of suburbia. And Jeffrey is slowly but surely getting tainted by it.
That's one of the worst bits of acting, though. It's when he wakes up, he goes home, and then he wakes up the next day after he'd hit her, and he just starts crying, and it's some of the worst on-screen fake crying I've ever seen in my life. So bad.
Not what about Tommy Wiseau's crying?
That was a masterclass.
I did not hit her!
In a few minutes, bitch!
One thing that I think makes David Lynch David Lynch, not just the great wackiness and the kind of his vision, but the sound and the music we get in these films. And you have to admit, the Blue Velvet is incredible. And every song that he has playing, and this goes back to Twin Peaks as well and Mulholland Drive and everything else, his music that he has going alongside any scene, like Cameron Crowe, there's always some sort of music. It's so wacky and out there, it shouldn't work with the scene. So it's quite a serious scene. You might have some sort of jazz, sort of big bass, just playing a few notes and a random little violin. But it works. And for some reason, even though it is a bit out there, it makes me think, this is David Lynch. This is why it's a David Lynch film. This works.
I also noticed David Lynch does this thing in moments of darkness or evil or danger. He has this low rumbling sound that goes throughout the particular scene. You see it in Twin Peaks as well.
Are you sure your washing machine wasn't on next door?
I promise you.
Or a rampant rabbit.
I wanted to say that, but I was trying to be nice because we're a family show. But yeah, you were.
But it's like a roll of something bad is about to happen, and it's displayed in this film when Frank and Dorothy have that sick scene together.
Ugh. I don't want to have sex ever again after watching that. It's just gross.
It is horrible. Like, he hits her because she's looking at him.
But she loves it.
She did a little smile. I went,
don't worry, that's not in your contract for this part. Don't worry. Gosh. We said we're going to be in control of you, but it's not going to be like, what's that in the recording? Gemma, stop looking at me, you bitch.
That's horrendous.
Don't worry, it's never going to happen. We love you. Like him.
Not like Frank.
Next week, I turn up with a mask.
we've got some of the helium left over.
That's how it's all been set up, yeah. Now you're starting to panic. That's a nervous laugh.
I'm very scared right now. Send help.
Going back to the visuals of this film, one of the visuals I love is when McLaughlin's character comes back to the woman's house, Rossellini's house, right near the end of the film when the police are going to turn up and they're looking for Frank. And when he gets there, Rossellini's husband is dead with a gunshot wound and his ear cut off. And then the copper... the yellow jacket man, or whatever they call him, he's there and he's been crudely lobotomized and he's still alive, but he's standing up and doesn't know where the hell he is,
doing these jerky
reactions. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a great visual. I thought that was cool as hell.
God, that is nightmare. That is a nightmare. I'm frozen in fear now because of, that's terrifying.
Exactly. visually then we're happy. And does it make you now, Ben, want to see more? Because you're a bit let down now. It's like, oh, welcome to David Lynch. Here's his one of his first Blue Velvet. And you're like, oh, that's shite. Are you now like, I want to go out and see more?
Absolutely, because I know that Lynch's stock in trade is just being weird as hell. And I like weird shit, man. I'm down for it. And like you say, because he's the kind of guy who can do things his own way. He doesn't have studio interference passing him notes. You need to make this make more sense, blah, 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 blah. He does it his own way. And I dig that. So I do want to see more. I really want to see Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway. There are films that I want to see. I just hope they're not as fucking boring as this one.
You've seen Eraserhead, haven't you?
No.
Oh.
He also did Wild at Heart with Nick Cage.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. And he's not doing any more films now. He's just announced that he's calling it a day. Probably because you just ripped him a new one. Ben doesn't like me from skip to the end. Yeah. I'm done.
He's a big fan of the podcast.
Massive. That's why I think Twin Peaks got delayed and stuff, because he wanted just to focus on listening to us.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing I didn't like about the film, and they do some blatant product placement. They do it with Heineken and Budweiser and I think Blue Riband. There's a scene when they're just about to sit down and watch Dorothy perform at the Slow Club for the very first time. And I think Jeffrey turns to Sandy and goes, oh, you've never drank Heineken before? Oh, my dad drinks Budweiser. And he's like, oh yes, Budweiser, king of beers. It's like, oh, it's the one bit. It absolutely makes my blood boil.
We'd never do that, would we, Mark?
Here's to episode 71. Let's all get our brother's cider glasses.
Delicious brothers there.
Congratulations, guys.
Delicious.
But there is no better cider than brothers.
But product placement. It makes me sick.
Massively. I hate it. Say that again in those sure, amazing microphone, Ben. It sounds so clear. It's brilliant. Anything else you'd like to say about this one?
Nope.
I'm surprised, Ben, that it's so low for you, so put it into a number.
Directed beautifully, visually stunning, the music was great, everything of that aspect, all the technical stuff was flawless, I can't fault it. I just found the story to be mostly boring and the acting to be atrocious, with the exception of Dennis Hopper, who is, or was, the king. So it's 5 out of 10 for me.
For a minute then, I thought you were talking about Clerks.
Beautifully directed. It is a technically flawless film, Clerks.
5, wow. Gemma.
High art. This is a beautiful film. It's a classic film, and it's a film that's going to stay with me even when I leave today for a very long time. So I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Yowza.
It's going to be an 8 because I've seen a lot of Lynch films and it isn't his best, but I know what's coming, and I still think for the film that he did at this point, and it's a lot like his other stuff, it's still 8. And now I'm trying to think of a number.
Maybe 7.
7. Mm-hmm. So overall, Blue Velvet gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10. So is it Gemma next?
Yeah, I think so.
It's my turn. We are going to be watching a big film for the next episode.
Big. We spend too much time together, dude.
I kind of like the idea of having maybe a little bit of collateral in case our next film that we review is not going to be great.
Collateral? That's a film.
Oh, I'm leading you guys down a wild goose chase here. It's actually a film that was briefly mentioned by one of our listeners in the top 3.
Oh.
So for the next episode, we're going to be watching Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It's time for round 2 of Whose Tagline Is It Anyway? A game show whose title we've not stolen from anywhere. That's entirely original, copyright, Skip to the End Podcast 2017. The way this works is I will give each of our 2 contestants here 5 famous movie taglines, and all they've got to do is tell me the movie.
Simple, isn't it, really?
Simple, yeah. We'll go back and forth, 1 each. If after 10, you're level pegging, there are 2 more, which we can do as a tiebreaker. If after the 2 tiebreakers, you're still level pegging, there's a sudden death one, it'll be the fastest finger first.
Wow.
I'll do the fingering.
Still the best line ever.
So, birthday girl, Poochie, you can pick. Would you like to go first, or would you like Mark to go first?
I'd like to go first, please.
Okay, so the first one for you then, Gemma.
Okay.
Let's go to work.
Office Space?
Incorrect. You don't get a point, Mark, but you know what it is.
Men at Work?
It's not.
That would have been good.
That's my second answer.
Yeah.
It's Reservoir Dogs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Here's one for you, Mark. And if you don't get this, you need to have a hard look at yourself.
No pressure. I hate that because it makes my brain even more jelly-like.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water.
It might be that little small film Jaws.
Incorrect. Back in the Water. It's Jaws 2, you dick.
What a wanker. This is the screw job all over again.
So it's nil-nil at this point. Gemma, your second one.
Okay.
Your mind is the scene of the crime.
Minority Report.
Nope. Oh, this is going well, isn't it? Yeah. Mark, any ideas? No points
on
the line.
Hang on. Last time in this episode, neither of you had scored at this point either, so don't get all cocky, mate. I don't know.
Your mind is the scene of the crime. Can you think of any films where crimes are occurring in people's minds?
Inception.
Correct.
Woo! Yeah. I don't get a point. Nope.
The empty victory.
Here's your second one then, Mark. Can you really trust anyone?
That proper seems really familiar.
I know.
I'm going to go with The Room.
Correct!
Yes!
Yes!
That poster that I've got in my lounge, kitchen, bedroom.
On yes! Doors, mirrors, car.
I would have wanted to kill myself if I hadn't got that right.
I would have wanted to kill myself if you didn't get that right.
Tommy did kill himself.
He did. And we thank him every day for your sacrifice. Hold on.
Can we just say that it wasn't Tommy who killed himself? It was Johnny who killed himself. Tommy's alive and well.
No, if you remember, Denny walks in, Tommy! Remember? Because he knew his lines. I'm winning, aren't I?
You are 1 point up. Gemma, are you ready for your next one?
Let's do it.
From gentle to mental.
That's like an autobiographical story for me. From gentle to mental. Who's a mentalist?
If you ever became an alcoholic, your book should be called From Pooch to Hooch. That would be awesome.
That is pretty good.
That'd be cool. Yeah. And then we'll get in with Hooch and start getting them to send us stuff.
Yeah. If you're listening.
Hooch was decent back in the day. I remember getting drunk on that when I was about 16. Always, it was awesome.
It's back, though. It's back. You can get it now.
But you always had the lemon flavour.
It'd be back bigger than ever now, mate. We just plugged it again.
Mm-hmm.
Hooch. Hooch. The refreshing lemon alcopop.
Yeah. Anyway, also enjoyed Smirnoff Ice.
WKD, the podcast choice. So, something about mental.
From gentle to mental.
I know, I'm trying to think of who's lost their cojones.
That means bollocks. Why would it matter if they've lost their bollocks?
I'm trying to not swear as much. It's really hard.
I think I might know this one.
Well, you can have a guess in a minute if Gemma gets it wrong.
Oh, God. God, it's
20 minutes, by the way, it's going. You can just, you know, give up.
No. Quits never give up. They just fall flat on their face. Me, myself, and Irene.
Correct.
Oh,
bastard!
No,
I knew that was it.
Only took us 6 hours.
Couldn't she get half a point for waiting so long?
Stop! Come on.
Vagisil.
Clean up on her.
Hey there, candy pants.
A little too much cheese on the taco.
Incredible.
Right, so it's one all, and it's your turn, Mark.
Sorry, the sausages. Those sausages are bigger than your boy's penises. Amazing. That's got to be a rewatch one day. Big time. Not anymore now, we've ruined it.
No, it's a great film. Some memories are best forgotten.
Oh, my God. Memento.
Correct.
Yes!
2-1 for Mark. Gemma, your next one.
Okay.
You'll believe a man can fly.
Is it Hook?
I think Hook. I know that.
Well, it's one of the most famous ones of all time, Mark.
Superman.
Correct.
I don't get a point, but I'm still winning 2-1.
So Mark is 2-1 up, and it's your turn again, Mark. Are you ready? On the air, unaware.
This is tough, because I've got a couple of films in my head, and I just don't know because I could win this right now. On the air, unaware. Right, let's go for this. Do you know it?
I think I do.
Yeah.
I think it's Good Morning Vietnam.
Incorrect. Gemma, any ideas?
I think it's The Truman Show.
It was The Truman Show.
Yeah.
You don't get the point, though, sadly. So it's still 2-1 to Mark, but it's your turn, Gemma.
This is so tense.
You have to get this right.
You have to, to tie it up. Even a hitman deserves a second shot.
Sounds so light and fluffy, but it's probably horrendously violent.
I think I know this, and I genuinely do. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm just going to make myself a cup of tea, because I know how long you take. This is ridiculous. You know, how quick was I on the last one? Bam, bam. Bam, bam, Bigelow. What a wrestler. He was good.
He was agile for a big man.
He was.
Isn't he like dead Red now?
He's very dead, yeah. Mm.
Kind of like my chances winning this game.
No, you can do it. Or you can draw. 2-1 is you're still close. But you've got to get it right.
I know. Leon.
Oh, incorrect. Mark, do you know it?
Is it John Wick 2?
No, it's Gross Point Blank.
Oh, so I win.
So Mark does win. You can extend your lead, though. You've got another one here, Mark. Are you
Brilliant.
Ready? Mischief, Mayhem, Soap.
I know this.
Oh, man. Is it Fight Club?
Yeah. Correct.
Woo! 3-1! You have been absolutely annihilated.
Thank you very much.
After such a shit start, 3-1's all right.
It was a good recovery.
Can we have the tiebreakers?
We can indeed. So we've got three more left. So the next two...
Work together, yeah?
All right, then.
Teamwork, right?
Teamwork.
So the next two, which would have been the tiebreakers, have... The similar have similar themes, or rather, I should say, they're written in the same way. You'll see what I mean.
Ooh.
So the first one, five criminals, one lineup, no coincidence.
Go for it.
Usual Suspects.
Correct.
Totally.
And using the exact same wording. Eight legs, two fangs, and an attitude.
Eight-legged freaks?
No. Gemma, any idea?
Eight legs, two fangs. Oh, my God. Is it arachnophobia?
It is arachnophobia. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the absolute final one that would have been the fastest finger first.
Okay.
How two boys worlds apart became the best of friends.
Mac and me.
Correct.
Unbelievable. I wish we kind of drawed now, just so we could have Mac and me.
That would have been brilliant.
I'm the winner.
Well done.
You are the winner, Mark. And Gemma, you get to come back next week and be the games master.
I do.
It's one all,
and
isn't
it's one all.
It?
It's me versus Mark for all the glory.
Oh, my God.
It's like Undertaker and Stone Cold.
It is.
Christ.
Oh, stay tuned. I'm already tense. Tensai. No, I am. Honestly, I'm so tense. I cannot believe that this is going to happen. Head to head, me and you, dude. The pioneers, the founders, the leaders of the world.
The daddies.
Podcasting.
Well,
and you're in charge.
Hey, well, let's find out next time.
It's now time for some good old-fashioned listener questions. They've been coming in since day one. That's something that will never go away, I don't reckon. What a feature that is. All the people out there get to be featured on this episode. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
It's nice. Good, yeah.
Let's kick things off with Aaron Wildman. Guys, a Hellboy remake reboot without Perlman. Discuss. I was shocked to see this news. I didn't even see it coming.
I'm torn because on one hand, I love Ron Perlman and he is Hellboy to me. And to not have Guillermo del Toro involved seems crazy because Guillermo del Toro is genuinely good friends with Mike Mignola, who created the comic book character. So to take it away from them and do it with someone new seems odd to me. But that said, I like the fact that it sounds like it's going to be David Harbour. So David Harbour we know recently from being the cop in Stranger Things, and I like that he's getting this bit of a push in his career, because historically, prior to Stranger Things, whenever you saw David Harbour in anything, he was just the dickhead in the suit. He was usually an FBI agent or a lawyer. He was always an asshole in a suit who was against the good guys. So for him to get a bit of a push in his career and be able to do different things, I'm all for it. I think he would do a good job.
I'm looking forward to it. It's just a bit too soon after they announced they're not making the third, so it's kind of like ripping the plaster off and then slowly putting it back on to try and heal those really badly burnt scars, because I was gutted when he officially came out, because he did himself, didn't he, and tweeted, sorry guys, this is really it, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it's R-rated and it's got potential.
Let's have a look. Let's see what happens. And we'll make our decision from there.
And we will review it, I'm sure, in about 4 years' time. Jeff Savary has said he knows someone that is collecting all of the official Star Wars helmets from each film. He just wants very quick advice. How should he display them? By type? In the order that the films came out? Or how popular they are? How would you display them if you had them?
Hmm.
I know by Ben's way that he's very anal, he'd have to be 1-7. Oh, no, actually, you'd probably be the original trilogy. How would you do it, actually? I don't know Ben at all.
No, it's weird. No, you're right, because I'm so OCD. I don't know. It would have to be whatever psychically soothes me. I think it'd probably have to be an order of size. Smallest to largest.
But, dude, the numbers would be like 1, 3, 6. Yeah, you couldn't do that. You have to have 1-7.
I don't think I could display them then. They just have to be in a box in a cupboard.
This is true.
Maybe by size, so largest to smallest.
Literally what I just said.
Yes, exactly that.
What Ben said, or maybe in colour. You know, do it like a rainbow.
I would just have to be 1-7 just because it would annoy me, and I wouldn't buy them anyway.
I'll tell you what, though, you get them nice and polished. You've got to keep that helmet polished, don't you?
Massively.
Rub that helmet.
Big time. I spend hours polishing my helmet.
Me too.
Loads.
I don't have a helmet.
You should. We'll buy you one for your next birthday. A Poochie helmet. The Irish Online has said, what are your guys' thoughts on the announcement of a Labyrinth spin-off?
Oh, I don't care.
I don't. It's been too long now. Yeah. I don't give a shit.
And leave it.
Yeah, just there you go. It's just too long. Probably, David Bowie's not going to be involved. I'm done.
They'd probably get someone like...
No, he's got different things on.
They'd probably get like Zayn Malik to be the Goblin King or something.
It's just not going to be good. Yeah. Leave it. Done. I'd rather see a remake.
I wouldn't.
No. What am I talking about?
I don't know.
I think I'm drinking some weird acid. I don't know. A Beardo Talk Films. I love these ones. Off the cuff. Your favourite film from, are you ready? Tim Burton.
Edward.
Beetlejuice. Del Toro.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Hellboy.
Nice. Oh. James Cameron.
Aliens.
Brilliant. And finally, Fincher.
Or Fight Club.
Zodiac.
Oh! They're the best questions.
I know. Beardo, keep coming them every week. You can be an official part of the podcast. So much fun. Right then, guys, this has been a popular question, so it's come from Sam Bajul, Ian Dickey, and Owen Bruce Lee have all asked this. Your views on the Blade Runner 2049 trailer, the first long 2.5 minutes. Let's give it, Ben. This is your baby. Yeah.
I dig it. I really like it. And after I watched it, I texted you, didn't I, Mark?
Yeah.
And the thing I said to you is you said you were about to text me the same thing. And what we had both thought was, this is what Ghost in the Shell should have been.
Exactly that. And it's depressing because it makes that film even more shit now.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be that person that people will tweet now and say, Mark said on episode 71, but I'm thinking it's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's in the safe hands. I think it's going to be great.
I think it does look really good, and I am excited. The only two faults I have with it is, why is Harrison Ford not in a costume? Why does he look like he's just stepped out of Gap?
Yeah.
Where's the cool futuristic clothes? He's just in a Gap t-shirt and chinos, for Christ's sake. You know, I imagine he's probably wearing some like jellies or something as well. What's going on?
Put the man
in a costume. And the other thing is, a friend of ours, friend of the podcast, Stu, we were in the car talking about this the other day, and Stu made a great point that even though this kind of futuristic world they show looks good and is what Ghost in the Shell should have been, it doesn't look dark and dirty and as gritty as the original one did, and it doesn't. It does look a bit too shiny, a bit too CGI. And I agree, I am with him on that, but I still think I'm excited. I'm cautiously optimistic.
It looks promising. The special effects just look jaw-dropping. They look absolutely stunning. And I think we could be in for a contender for Film of the Year.
And we get Gosling.
Yes, we do!
I can't wait. I'm just going to... And we will be reviewing that.
We will indeed.
That's the one where I think Ben might have a meltdown if it's shit. That'd be horrible. Yeah. Ben's not on this episode. He's killed himself.
You know what I mean? Poochie.
On the way home, yeah. It's just, sorry.
Died on the way back to my home planet.
Yeah. James Carroll has said, right, guys, you've just got a 35-0 streak with number one podcasts. You've had over 100,000 downloads for an episode. You've got keyrings. You've got T-shirts. What is next? Live episode? ?
I think we're just going to... do the same thing we do every day, Pinky. Try to take over the world. And if you're old enough to get that reference, I applaud you.
I don't know what we're going to do. Gemma's doing a lot more videos now.
Mm-hmm.
I did my first video this week. That was pretty cool, the
alien
one.
That was
one.
Hilarious.
That was a real alien, you know.
I know it was.
Genuine.
It scared the shit out of me.
I don't know. One day I'd like to hire a cinema and put a film on and do a Q&A or something like that. That'd be cool, but I don't think we're that big. Even though we are big, I don't think people would actually pay to travel to come and see it. It's a nice fantasy in my head, but...
Or director's commentary?
That would be awesome. Yes.
Yes, I'm well up for that. I think we should have a little dabble with that.
That might be the next big thing, a commentary from us.
Watch this space.
We can't do a live episode, though. We've said this in the past. Yeah. We edit out so much shit, and it's mainly just really offensive, illegal stuff that we have to cut out.
Yeah. If you think the stuff I do say is bad, trust me.
And I'm an absolute filth bag.
She is.
Absolute filth.
Ugh.
Gemma's filth, hashtag, do that. Hashtag Gemma's filth. I want to see that on Twitter. While you listen to this episode, just hashtag and we'll get it trending.
Hashtag Gemma's filth.
Yes. Neil Stewart has said, if you had the chance to cameo in the MCU, which character story would you love to be part of?
I'm really digging the Thor Ragnarok trailer. And that looks cool, man. I want to be there on that alien planet with Thor and the Hulk.
I'd like to be part of the Doctor Strange universe.
Beautiful.
Start manipulating the worlds around you and do some sweet kung fu on like a ceiling or a tunnel or... I don't know. But that would be absolutely incredible to see visually.
I want to be part of Guardians 3. I want to be on set with Teenage Groot. And I want to just be hanging out with him and just seeing how it's all coming to, you know, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
That would be ace.
Oh, why would we have to go to a normal day job
now?
I just want to be
I want to kick ass with Benedict Cumberbatch.
That would be awesome.
Yes.
And Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes.
Rupert Denholm Hall. If you could go back in time and stop an appalling sequel or prequel being made, which one would you choose?
Do you know, the first one that comes to mind is Hannibal Rising. Do you remember that?
Unfortunately, I still do.
What a piece of shit that was.
It was. Considering they had Anthony Hopkins and he was killing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely not, you know, but he was actually genuinely killing it.
Yeah.
And then in, you know, to replace that whole kind of... It didn't even feel like the same film or anything to do with it. It just felt terrible.
It was an atrocity.
And that guy couldn't act.
No.
I hated him.
Gaspard,
I mean, he was tied
Ulliel,
to the tree.
I think his name was, and he was...
Shite.
Yeah.
Short Circuit 2. Get rid of that guy, the white guy who played an Indian doctor, because that's an atrocity to filmmaking.
Yeah. Fisher Stevens.
Ugh. If you're listening, kill yourself.
It's not his fault that he got cast as an Indian. Fisher Stevens is an Oscar-nominated documentarian now, and he was in Lost.
He was great. I meant the person that cast him in that one told him to do that accent. He probably has killed himself. I would go with Indiana Jones 4.
Oh, yeah.
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 There's nothing else needs to be said about that. Tam, Liz, and O'Driscoll. Sorry, Tam, if you're listening. You know I struggle with this. By now, you should know this. So, she's asked, who would you cast as the next James Bond, the next James Bond villain, and also the next James Bond girl? That's awesome.
Mm.
You're asking a lot. I think you're taking the piss a bit with three questions.
That's three questions.
But we'll let you off, because I probably got your name wrong.
Even though he is in the Star Wars Empire, I would love to see Oscar Isaacs maybe take on the role of James Bond.
Can't have an American for Bond. Won't stand for it.
All right, then.
Not having it.
Oh, let's go with Idris then. Idris Elba.
Nice.
For a Bond girl, I'm really digging Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who is in Black Mirror in the San Junipero episode. I think she's beautiful and she's a fine damn actress. And maybe for a villain, this is going to be a bit of a wild card, but I'm digging Jerome Flynn. I think he would be magnificent as a power-crazed psychopath. I think he'd be fantastic.
I love Jerome Flynn. It's amazing to me that he was famous for being in Robson and Jerome,
yes,
and then became Bronn in Game of Thrones and is the best character in Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Throw him a bone.
For me, it's Hiddleston for Bond all the way. It has to be Tom Hiddleston. Motherfucker looks good in a suit. Swan,
he looks good in anything.
Like,
he does.
And we know because we saw him in person.
That's true. We were about 6 inches from the dude.
Yep.
Yeah. As the Bond girl, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Oh, that's a good choice.
I am all about Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Indeed.
And as the villain, how's this for a curveball? The main villains in Bond films are never women.
Oh.
Always dudes. So I want a Bond villainess, and I want Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
My
girl.
You watch now, next week, the new Bond gets cast. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you now, I'm the villain. It'll be like, oh my God, listen to this episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mine would be, I wanted to say Tom Hardy, but now you said Hiddleston, I'm going to go with Hiddleston, because he's just so suave.
He is.
As a villain, I'd go for Jack Nicholson. Bring him back right now. We haven't seen him on the screen for a long time, and make him harrowing. As a Bond girl, Nikki Bella. You know it. How good would she be? And she would be able to entice anyone.
It's been a very, very wrestling heavy episode, this, hasn't it?
That's good, because the last one was AIDS. So
that's true. WrestleCast.
So I'd prefer wrestling over that. Steve has said from the ELIFM podcast, who would be your dream character guest? So not actually a celebrity, a character to have on as a guest.
I would love to have Peter Lowe from Vampire's Kiss, because he would be batshit crazy.
Amazing.
I would love to have the character of Tommy DeVito from Goodfellas, Joe Pesci's character. Because I tell you what, Mark, he wouldn't put up with any of your shit.
I'd be killed 10 minutes in. I'd go for Jack Burton. How cool would he be to have on this show, and it's Kurt Russell, but let's be honest about Jack Burton in the character of Big Trouble in Little China. Let's be honest about it. He would be just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know he'd come in with like a white vest, a white tank top, and some stone blue washed jeans.
But again, he probably wouldn't put up with my shit.
But we could probably ask him for all the child support he owes us. He's been our dad and never got a penny from him.
Amazing. Did you see recently that he was with his wife when they got the Hollywood star?
Yeah, they got joint stars, didn't they?
That was beautiful to see. Aww. Absolutely great. Sam Killing Joke Told has said, if the world went absolutely nuts and the government started burning all films in existence, which one would you save?
Ooh.
V for Vendetta, so then we would have the truth always.
Nice.
It'll be Star Wars A New Hope for me. It's not even my favourite Star Wars film, but it's where it all began. It's where my love of sci-fi began.
That's beautiful, man. I would say Big, and I say it every time, but it's my most watched film. I love it. And if the world is burning every bloody film in existence, I want to feel good. I don't want to be watching something bloody depressing.
Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, pick that. Burn me as well. Fuck it. Liz Marshall has said, and as well as Mustache Movie News, guys, we've just read the announcement of Dread, the TV series. Discuss, and please, please, is it going to feature Carl Urban?
I am all for it, because I love Judge Dredd as a character. I was a huge Judge Dredd fan as a kid. I've still got loads of Dredd annuals knocking around somewhere. More Dredd all the time. I'm happy for it. But I would want it to involve Carl Urban, because I thought he was fantastic in that standalone Dredd film.
He was great. He was really, really great.
I feel sorry for the person they do cast if it isn't him, because everyone will be saying it should be Carl Urban. Yeah. Everybody loves Dredd. Everyone I talk to says, oh, that'd be awesome. But he wouldn't quite pull it off. But everybody I know loves Dredd. Yeah. No one says, oh, that's all right, or it's shit. Everyone's like, that's great, and I wish we had the sequel.
Yeah.
T-shirts are my tats, has said, apparently, all of us have a book in us. Do you have any ideas of writing a script or a book of your own?
I've definitely got script ideas, but I'm not going to say them out loud on here, because someone will nick them.
Yeah. Hollywood will make it next week.
And then I won't get any bunts, so I'm not saying.
No, I've got some ideas, and like Ben, you know, I don't want to be broadcasting my ideas, but it would be good one day to actually have some time and sit down and maybe write some stuff. Even reintroduce my blog would be a really nice idea.
I wouldn't want to try and write a book, because I am an absolute spud. And to write a script for a film would just be ridiculous. I'd ask Ben to do it for me, but I'd do all the promotion for it, and I'd just take, you know, all the money.
We could just spell check it. It'd be fine.
No, there's a lot more to it that you need than that.
That's fine. I'll write the script. I'll bring you on as a producer, Mark. Done deal.
That's all right. Cool. Basement Condition have said, what would be your ideal 80s sequel?
Oh, well, we've mentioned it already, Beetlejuice.
You're not going to say Short Circuit 2? No. Beetlejuice. Yeah. And we still get rumours that it doesn't happen.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Beautiful.
Maybe he could get a high-flying job. He phones in sick one day and all hell ensues.
That would be awesome. I would go with a Roger Rabbit Part 2.
Oh, yeah. That'd be good.
And I guarantee now, next week, these will be announced. Easy Rider Raging Podcast has said that we're quite harsh on the Fast franchise, aren't we? But did you have much love for Fast 5? Because they believe it's utter gold.
Oh, God, how many ago was that?
That was the one where they pulled like that safe attached to the car.
Was The Rock in that one?
Yes. I think it might be the first one he was in.
Yeah, it was all right.
I liked it. Yeah. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's the best of the seven.
Not the most recent one, 8, that's just come out. The one before that, 7, I genuinely enjoyed. I thought that was good. But it might be just because we saw it on the BFI IMAX screen in London.
Yeah.
And everything looks good on that.
Rich Blinkworth has said, your most disappointing movie you've ever seen where you literally have said, I wish I could get those 2 hours of my life back. You are that angry.
You say 2 hours. How about 9 hours? I watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy in a row once just because I had F all else to do that day. And by God, I wish I hadn't bothered.
You could have been worse and watched the extended cuts, which were about 4 hours long. So you'd have been 12
Jesus
hours.
Jesus Christ. How tedious are those films?
You're not a fan?
No.
I think I'd go for Interstellar because my expectations were so high. And I love Christopher Nolan. He's my favourite filmmaker. But nah, terrible film.
It was rubbish.
Was Ghost in a Shell 2 hours? Because it felt much longer. So, yeah, listen back to a few episodes ago when we ripped it a new one.
Aaron Venom Snake. Oh, I love this question. You can attend any Oscars ceremony, and who would you go with from what year? Wow. I know Ben's an absolute huge lover of the Oscars, so he doesn't even have to think.
No, so I've got my answer for this. So in 1999, Roberto Benigni won the Best Actor Oscar for Life is Beautiful, and the little Muppet jumped up out of his seat and climbed over people's seats to get to the stage, and everyone thought it was beautiful and charming, and I just thought it was infuriating. And that same year, he was up against Edward Norton for American History X. So I would have gone to the Oscars and sat next to Norton, and then I would have curb-stomped that motherfucker when he was running over the seats.
Whoa.
Thinking the exact same thing. I would have had one of those child reins on Benigni. So then when he started like jumping up and down, I would have gone, no, Benigni. And then just like sort of like pulling back like a yo-yo. And then, you know, then he wouldn't be able to go up on the stage.
I need to see footage of that. I've never
seen
it.
You've never seen it?
No.
God.
You will like screw a new one.
I think
I'd
be going crazy.
Yeah.
He was just annoying.
There's a reason why he's not been anything since, when no one cares about him anymore.
Didn't he do that really bad Pinocchio remake?
He did.
He got slated.
In 2001, Cameron Crowe won the best screenplay for Almost Famous. I would love to be there for him to see that. And obviously, Kate Hudson was also up for an Oscar. So to be there, knowing one of my favourite films had this, that would have been an amazing experience. Because it wasn't meant to win, and it did.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. A few more questions. Paul Walker has said...
Paul Walker?
Yeah, it's not the Paul Walker.
Is this from the Medium?
Not. Yeah. Azir Ansari?
Aziz Ansari?
Brilliant. Should he be given a blank cheque and allowed to make his Annie Hall?
Yes.
I mean, that is assuming that I care about Annie Hall, which I don't, because I don't like Woody Allen. But I think Azzy should be given a blank check and be allowed to do whatever he wants, because he's a hilarious stand-up comic. Master of None is a fantastic TV show.
Yes, and the second season's just been released by Netflix. Mm-hmm,
and that is the rest of my evening.
Yeah. The guy's a genius, he's hilarious, but he's also incredibly clever, and he writes these masterpieces where not only does it show humour, but it also shows real human heartbreak. Mm-hmm. Give him the check.
Amazing. A couple more questions before we finish. We've got Narn Beatty, who said, is the age of prequels over?
No.
Not at all.
Hollywood will keep bumping them out.
There's a cash cow and it needs milking.
And very finally, Shaken Not Nerd have said, if you could own one screen prop from any movie, what would it be?
I'd want the Book of the Dead from the Evil Dead. Like, really stir some shit up for some enemies. I don't know. But yeah, I think that could kind of be good. And let's just hope it doesn't backfire on me. And then I end up with a pencil in my ankle. I don't know.
Oh, that's an awesome choice. I'm trying to think. It'd have to be something from Jaws or The Thing. Actually, I'd go for the dog from The Thing with all the wires. Because that's actually obviously a big puppet. And I'd have that in my lounge. And it'd just be like, people would walk in and be like, what the hell's that dog doing? I'd be like, that's the original. Yeah. From John Carpenter's The Thing. Now get out my house.
I tell you what I would want. I would want a ghost trap from Ghostbusters.
Oh!
I had a toy one. You could buy them from Argos back in the day. So I had a little plasticky one, but I would like one of those proper metal ones.
That would be amazing. Mm-hmm.
If you're listening, anyone that works in America that could get, not off the new Ghostbusters, but the original one and send it to us, we'll send you a keyring.
Yeah.
Which is a fair deal.
It's a fair trade.
Keep your questions coming. The best way is to go on skiptotheend.co.uk. On there, we've got our Facebook, our Twitter, our Instagram, and our email. And we get loads of questions literally from email and all these different sources of social media. So keep them coming, and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. But the end is never the end with us these days. We have a new regular feature on the show called Skip to the Recommend. That's where each of us comes to you with something that we're enjoying right now. It can be a movie, it can be a book, it can be an album, it could be a brightly coloured kite that we saw in the sky. It can be absolutely anything, as long as we can justify it. And the hope is that you out there in listener land will enjoy it too. Gemma. I'm going to throw it to you first. What are you going to recommend to us this time round?
I'm going to go for something that we've not done before. I'm actually going to recommend some artwork.
Nice.
La-di-da.
Mm, I know.
And some Thai latte.
You're not even wearing a scarf.
I know.
I've got my beret in my bag somewhere. But it's a guy called Jeff Lee Johnson, and the artwork is called Blue Plate Special. So he can be found on jefflyjohnson.deviantart.com, or you can Google him, Blue Plate Special, Jeff Lee Johnson. Now, he's a freelance illustrator from Minneapolis, and the image is so haunting that there was no way I couldn't recommend this. So I saw this image probably about 4 or 5 days ago. And the first thing you notice when you watch it is it's all set in like a dining cart, like what you would see in the 1940s, 1950s, and there's people eating food or going to the counter. But the first thing you see is a point of view shot of a cup of coffee with a skull floating into it, and you go, oh, that's a bit weird. Then you look at the picture even more and you notice, hang on, that looks really weird. Oh, wait, now look at the corner. That looks really disturbing. And the more you look, the more you are rewarded with all these little surprises and secrets. It's just absolutely mind-blowing.
This is
to
all
look.
In one picture.
Yeah. I've actually got a download of this image because I want to show both Mark and Ben. And I want to get their reaction and see if this is warranted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have to re-record something else.
So this is the image. This is Blue Plate Special.
Ben
so
looks
if you, wow.
So if confused. You look into it.
No, you're right, because I was looking at it and thinking, okay, this is just people in the background. And then I realised that the mother holding a kid's arm has got an octopus arm and she's dragging him by the wrist. And then the pie that's being cut appears to have blood in it.
Yeah.
It's twisted, this. I dig it.
I like it.
I would have that on my wall for sure.
The good thing about this is we can put it on the social.
Yeah.
That is really weird.
Just stopped in its tracks.
Look at all the individual elements and you'll see how much weird shit's going on.
The handprint in blood on the window. Oh, this is awesome.
And it completely took my breath away when I saw it. And I couldn't wait for this episode to tell people about it.
This is good. And we can put it out on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And I'm boring people because they don't want to hear me listening. But that's awesome.
But that's the reaction I wanted to hear. And it's really cool to see that you both...
And you put artwork. It's refreshing. Yeah. Look at us now. We're getting all stuff.
Oh, I might have to bring a poem next time.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But this guy, he is on Twitter at JeffLeeJohnson9. Go check out some of his other work. It's absolutely fantastic. Nice. But this is where it's at.
What was the name of that one again?
Blue Plate Special.
Jeff Lee Johnson, can you hook me up with a poster-sized print of that to put on my wall, please?
If you're listening, please do. But
that'd be awesome.
Love your work, man. Love your work.
Oh, mine seems just really boring now. Mine's a book.
Again?
Yeah.
Are you just, do you keep bringing books?
Documentary last time.
Just keep bringing books to pretend to people that you actually know how to
it
read.
It was a documentary last time, yeah. Remember
it
that?
It was.
This one is The Secret History of Twin Peaks by Mark Frost.
Nice.
An absolute stunning book.
I've got it bookmarked to buy in the next few days.
Brilliant. This is what I did. So I only read it last week because it's technically Twin Peaks 2.5, setting people up for Series 3 and the whole thing that happens in between, which is awesome. So there's loads of conspiracies in there. It dives into all of the backstories of all the characters, including Log Lady.
Awesome. She's my favourite.
Which is unbelievable. You don't hear much about this, so I thought they wouldn't talk about that. It's got myths. It's got all the covers up. I was totally engrossed by it. And because obviously I waited, this book's been out about a year. It's one of those books that you buy that you'd love to leave on the coffee table. It's so beautiful. It's hardback. It's all like this really green sort of fabric material. It's stunning. It's got all that sort of grease-proof paper in, you know, the real thin sort of nice, yeah. Having like wedding albums and all that. Loads of little pictures all attached in it. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's about a tenner. That's all it was on Amazon, which is unbelievable. And sometimes you think, do I wait for the softback or should I wait? And this book is just worth every penny. But the fact is that everyone out there now is going to experience, as you're listening to this, the return of this 25-year-old series. This is the gap. This is everything that people need. It's like your whole prologue for the new Alien film, but in text form, and it's gorgeous.
Mm.
It's absolutely stunning.
I'll be pressing that click button to buy tonight.
It's. I would have got you that instead of the Poochie card.
Okay.
I know how much you want the Poochie card.
So you know me, Mark. You know how when I get into something, I get in fully. I fully invest. So if I end up really digging Twin Peaks, which I hope I do, I'm going to have to end up borrowing that book off you.
I kind of don't want you to because I want you on the next episode and I know what you're like. It'd be like, I can't record Sunday. Why? I'm on this forum. I'm reading about this theory about Log Lady and it isn't a log. And I'll be like, Ben, just let it go, dude. Please. Your life for Lost was genuinely, joking aside, lost. You've lost months.
Oh, big time. Yeah, yeah. I used to watch them because sometimes the Sky would show them live, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Simulcast with America. Yeah. Yeah. And then I'd be on the forums for hours and then I realised, oh shit, I've got to go to work in an hour. Yeah.
So stay away, dude. We want you on the podcast.
I'll try. My pick this time is an album.
Oh.
And it's Inter Alia by At The Drive-In.
Amazing.
It's the first record by post-hardcore masters At The Drive-In in 17 years. They released an album called Relationship at Command 17 years ago and then broke up a year later. And I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know whether it'd be any good or not because 17 years is a long time between records. And Relationship at Command was a genuine, legit masterpiece. Is it as good? No. Is it a perfect album? Definitely not. There is filler on there. There is. But the highs are high enough that I can recommend this album. There are three songs that I want to single out. Governed by Contagions, Hostage Stamps and Pendulum in a Peasant Dress are as good as anything they've ever done. I feel like the production has let them down a little bit. The last record, Relationship of Command, was produced by Ross Robinson, and he gave it this really raw, urgent vibe, whereas this new one, it feels a bit more kind of... It feels more produced. That one didn't. It felt like a live record. It's not as crisp and as authentic and as virile and as lively as I would have wanted it to be, but there's enough on there that I really enjoyed, especially compared with the fact that they got back together 3 or 4 years ago to do a tour, touring the old material. And it was terrible. I went to their show at the Brixton Academy, and it's the only gig I have ever left early because they just clearly weren't putting the effort in. It was as cash-grabber tour as you will ever see. So when they wrote this record, that's why I was so scared that it would be dog shit. But it's genuinely worth listening to. Not their best, but I think if they're going to stay here and keep doing more, it's a good start.
We listened to this album on the way back from Deftones last week on the car on the way home. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is awesome, dude. Like, this is the first time I had heard it because you just bought the CD. And I was sat in the car going, this is absolutely awesome. And I remember the day that Ben went to see this gig in London a few years ago. And I said to him the next day, dude, how was it? Like, because I couldn't get the time off work. And he was furious. Mm-hmm. He was like, that band have literally... just infuriated me. They came on stage, they didn't put any effort in, they didn't even engage with the crowd, they didn't say hello or anything.
No.
Just utter shite, just got some money and buggered off. So when they announced the album, I was like, oh, I'm not even going to buy it, because I was still thinking, this is going to be another cash grab. But to hear you so passionately talk about it, and the few songs you did show me was old school.
Yeah,
it was
exactly,
awesome.
Exactly. There's a little bit too much filler, it's not perfect. If I were to give it a classic skip to the end score out of 10, it would probably be a 7, but it's better than I thought, and there are some genuine, absolute bangers on there.
Wow, look at us covering everything now. Well, on the next episode, I might like review some sort of country. I might go on holiday and start bringing that in. You know, South Africa.
Yeah. Oh, don't do South Africa. Leave it.
Certain coffees or something. I might just, you know, really bring it in.
Yeah. Could be anything. Absolutely anything.
That's the joy of this segment.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the next episode? Episode 72.
72. Well, you tell us, Mark. What are we reviewing? What's the main film?
Oh, God, I wonder what it is. Oh, Wonder Woman Man.
It is Wonder Woman Man.
It's a spoof. We're going to see Wonder Woman.
We are indeed. Gemma, what is our rewatch?
We're going to be rewatching Boogie Nights.
Oh, God, I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah.
I love that film.
Social media are going to go crazy. I know it already. You know when you announce a film, you think, well, this is a bit of a... I'm not sure if people are going to get on. This is one like announcing bloody Gremlins or something. People are going to be like,
Well, I can't wait to talk about it on the next episode.
It's going to be amazing.
It's going to be huge. And our topic of conversation are the top three films you will never watch. And the key to that is your explanations. You know, you can't just say, I'll never watch this because I don't want to. There needs to be a real reason. What is it in you? What is it about that film that means you will never, ever put that in your DVD player?
What I think is really strange about that is we can't break it down. Oh, the acting by this guy was great, and the sound effect, the cinematography. We don't know fuck all about this film.
It's
less about the film and more about you. Yeah. It's more about why you wouldn't watch that.
And I think we could pull some really interesting ones out of the bag and go, what? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you watch that? Mm-hmm.
Social media as well, reading some of them out. We'll actually name and shame people. Yeah. Be careful when you're answering this on Twitter.
We'll be judged.
It's going to be a fun one. Lots more as well. We'll give away loads of prizes. We'll play the third and final round of Whose Tagline Is It Anyway? Me versus Mark for all the gold.
Good.
It's going to be pretty good. And all the usual shenanigans that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll see you in 2 weeks.